Well, welcome back to another exciting episode of the Gun Munchers Podcast. I'm John, and this is episode number 9. Even though I said I was not going to keep doing all these bonus shows, there was one I just really had to do, and I have a special guest co-host with me for this one.
Howdy, folks. It's Ed.
So, Ed, you and I both have basically the same favorite company as far as DVD releases. And we were talking about it one night, about how many cool things this company puts out in their catalog, how incredible it is. And we thought, what the hell, we should do a show about this. So this is sort of Ed and I, kind of our love letter to the greatest DVD company ever.
Well, Blue Underground.
Yeah, Blue Underground. I would say ever at this point. Because everything that made Anchor Bay really cool back in the day is actually a Blue Underground title. So
yeah, pretty much.
So, we're going to do a really easy format with this one. I think we're just going to bounce it back and forth. I don't know how long the show will be. I know you and I both have a lot of titles we want to talk about. And we're just going to briefly go over some of the things in the catalog and some of the movies we like.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to go from there. So what do you think?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. Can I start off first?
Sure can.
I'm going to cheat because what I want to talk about is actually 4 movies.
Okay.
And I bet you know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things from Blue Underground is something that I recently discovered, and one of the movies isn't so great, but as a collection, I really had a great deal of fun with them, and I reviewed them for the site, and that would be the Blind Dead Collection, which is a series of I guess you'd kind of call them zombie movies. They're not traditional zombies. They're these Templar knights that come out, and basically terrorize the countryside and the attractive young European women that you know, come across their path end up, you know, not very well off. So that's the first one of the titles I wanted to talk about. And there's 4 films. And, of course, my dumbass did not have that page on my notes up. So they're the 4 films, and they are, if I remember right,
Tomb of the Blind Dead.
Mm-hmm. Return of the Evil Dead, mm-hmm. Ghost Galleon, and Night of the Seagulls. And mm-hmm. they're in that order. Tomb of the Blind Dead is probably, in my opinion, the best of the bunch.
Now, wait a second here. Now, let me throw something else out there.
Okay.
Something else that's very cool about this this set as well is not only do you get the 4 movies, mm-hmm. you also get a fifth disc that's all about the director, Amando de Osorio.
And it has like set.
Really?
Uh-uh.
Oh, man, yeah, on the set, like in the little, you know, the coffin-shaped box set.
Yeah.
You get a director disc, and there's actually something that a lot of people might have seen before. It's called The Knights of Terror. It's a little booklet. I have a Giallo book that's about the same size, same thing. Mm-hmm. And they actually throw this booklet in with the box set, and I've seen this thing sell at places for like $10. And it was out before the box set was.
I've got the booklet. I spent $8 on it before I even had the movies, just because it's such a good little reference guide. And then I got the 4 movies from Blue Underground to review.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have the bonus disc, but I do have the booklet and the movies. Let's see, Tombs of the Blind Dead, if I remember right. I'm doing this off the top of my head, guys. Isn't that the one with the guy and the 2 girls, and the one girl gets jealous that her friend is macking on her boyfriend or something, and she jumps off
the train.
She jumps off the train.
Yes.
And then she goes out, and she goes to the monastery where the Templars are, and she mm-hmm. gets killed, and then her boyfriend and friend go looking for her, and they end up hooking up with somebody, and they go over there, and a bunch of bad stuff happens.
Yeah, and these are also something interesting, too. These are some of my favorite Spanish horror films ever.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, I mean, they're really, I don't know, it's hard to explain considering, like you said, these are zombie movies, right?
Kind of, yeah.
But considering how old they are, I mean, these came out in the early 70s, you know, starting with the first one. It's kind of the first zombie film that I remember seeing post Night of the Living Dead and pre-Dawn that doesn't steal from Night of the Living Dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's something that always drawed me to these movies due to the fact that it's a different kind of a zombie movie. I love the thing that they do in these movies where they're blind, obviously, mm-hmm. and there's a cool reason for that, but they can actually hear your heart beating. Mm-hmm. So you can't hide from them. I mean, I love that. I think that's like one of the creepiest things I've ever heard of or seen in a zombie movie.
I would warn everybody about the series. Like I say, and I agree with you. The other thing that's – actually, before I warn anybody, the other thing I love, dude, is that sound effect they use when they're – that weird sort of, I don't know, echoey kind of mm-hmm. sound effect they use every time they show up.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's like the horses. Everybody always tries to steal one of the undead horses, and then that never works out for you.
Mm-hmm.
But like I say, Tombs of the Blind Dead is that. Then Return of the Evil Dead, I believe, has to do with a local town, and there's a festival,
mm-hmm.
and the blind dead go to the festival and basically just create havoc and kill up, basically lay siege to a town. And Tombs and Return are very good.
Mm-hmm.
Ghost Galleon has to do with a couple of models that. Doing a stunt for a speedboat in the ocean, the boat starts to sink, and they find this old ship, and it's got the Templars on it, and then people come looking for them, and they all end up on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really like Ghost Galleon all that much. I think it's pretty weak. But then the fourth one in the series is Night of the Seagulls, and that has to do with this doctor that takes this assignment on this isolated town, and there's a castle, and it's always the Templars. Every movie in this series, I think, is funny because they retell the origin of the Templars slightly mm-hmm. different for each movie. So it's not like a consistent. It's not like they're it's not like they're actually direct sequels. It's for me, if you think about it, it's kind of they retell the origins, and they're all a little bit different. And as a series, they're very solid. Ghost Galleon's not a good movie. But the other three are really good, and I'm glad they came back and did that fourth one
mm-hmm.
and ended on a high note. That's just my opinion as far as quality. I mean, three of the four movies are really good.
Yeah, and you know what else that they did that was really cool? And this shows you once again just how cool of a company Blue Underground is. It has the original Spanish versions mm-hmm. of the movies on the discs, and then... You know, like you could watch it with the subtitling and all that stuff too. I mean, they give you a lot of options to watch these movies, and it's a really nice box set that they have. You can buy them separately, I believe, as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really glad that this was the first thing that you brought up, because this is probably my favorite set of anything that they've ever put out. I just think it's such a unique series, and I'm just happy that Blue Underground was the people that picked them up and did this.
And even the individual discs are good. The one thing I would say about picking up the individual disc as opposed to the set, if I were going to spend the money, I would have bought the set, but I got these for review. The individual discs are actually a little bit light on special features. I will say that. Compared to the other Blue Underground releases, because I think they saved the special features for that fifth disc.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. There's a documentary about the writer and director, who's Armando D'Osorio. There's an interview on there with him. And, I mean, it's just a really cool set. I mean, considering that these are really obscure, I knew that prior to this box set, you could see Tombs of the Blind Dead and I think Return of the Evil Dead on DVD, but they were very cut. And they were really, really terrible quality versions.
Actually, Night of the Seagulls is public domain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they actually took these and remastered them and did a lot of great stuff with them, and they look fantastic.
Yep.
And if you've never seen them, like, because, I mean, I know, I'm sure, I mean, this is obviously a horror podcast or a movie podcast, so people listen to it, see a lot of stuff. If you have not seen these, go check them out. You'll be very surprised at what they are. I think people really it's something that it's a great thing still out there that a lot of people can discover if they haven't seen them yet.
Yep. Well, do you have something you want to talk about?
Absolutely. This is one of my favorite releases that this company's ever put out. And it amazes me, too, because this is also, to me, it's one of the most underrated horror films I've ever seen. And their edition of it is great. They put out a limited edition two-disc set of this movie. And it's a movie that's written by Dan O'Bannon, who did Return of the Living Dead. And it has an appearance by Robert Englund, who's everybody's favorite Freddy Krueger. And great effects by Stan Winston. This is a movie called Dead and Buried.
Yes.
This movie, I mean, really, when you talk about underrated horror films, like movies that are genuinely creepy, they're not horror comedies or they're not gore films or, you know, stuff like that. How many movies really are as grossly underrated as this one?
I have no idea why more people don't embrace this movie. This is another great movie. I love it. And of course, let me get obscure for a moment. You know, It's got one of them. Just let everybody out there know, and I don't know if you've gotten through this. I always tease about Chris Kattan.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain like guys that I obsess on who are in a lot of stuff but aren't big names.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of those guys is Christopher Allport.
Oh, yeah.
And if you remember, Christopher Allport has a fairly memorable turn in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is another one of those movies where great ending. Great ending.
Oh, yeah.
That always gets everybody. And that I always forget her name. I know she's fairly famous, but the blonde actress that plays the girl on the beach and the nurse... Lisa something.
Oh, I forget. I know who you're talking about, though.
But she's beautiful. And then the scene with the needle.
It's...
Old fucking shit.
I mean, tell me that's not... And in all honesty, too, I know a few shows back, obviously, we talked about Fulci.
Yeah.
And how he loves the eye gags, and people seem to really respond to that. I've never seen anything in an American film, or I guess Canadian film, you know, North American film, that has been as close to the Fulci eye terror stuff than that scene.
There's not at all, and this should be a well known movie, and that eye gag from that movie should be iconic. It should be something that everybody knows upon seeing it the first time. And it's weird because this is more of a cult. Even within horror fans, there's movies that are quote unquote cult movies that as fans of the genre we all have seen.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, let's be honest. People go, oh wow, dude, you know, The Burning. You know what? I guarantee you, even before The Burning came out on DVD, most horror fans had seen it on a bootleg or a VHS. They might not own it, but they'd seen it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And for being a movie that has been really honestly available on DVD for a while and on VHS, it wasn't hard to find. A lot of people have never seen this movie.
Yeah, and that's a shame. It really is, especially, too, because... you know, the two-disc edition that Blue Underground put out?
Yeah.
I mean, it has three commentary tracks on it. There's a thing on there with Robert Englund. Dan O'Bannon has a little feature on there. There's location stills. There's an effects thing with Stan Winston on here.
Amazing. I actually have the two-disc set.
Yeah. I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, it's really, to be perfectly honest with you, dude, you know how, like, as fans of DVDs, we always talk about, like, okay, well, if you could have this movie on DVD, what would you want on it? Okay, I want a commentary track, and I want this, and I want that. If DVD companies out there don't understand what they should be putting on their discs, this is a great example of what all DVDs, like, not all DVDs, but DVDs of great films, you know, like, they all deserve, like, treatment like this. And it's great. This shows you how good of a company Blue Under... I mean, you're going to keep hearing me say this throughout, but like Blue Underground, such a company because they put out great editions of stuff too, and this is a prime example of that.
Yeah, it's another great choice. That was one of the things I was going to talk about as well. So, I have another one for you. I'm going to go a little off the beaten path. My selections are not necessarily... They're more alphabetical order than in level of favorites. But there is a movie that they put out. It's directed by Fulci. It has David Warbeck and Al Cliver in it.
Oh, yeah.
And I like this movie, but I think this is one of the Fulci movies that maybe doesn't get a lot of credit, and that's The Black Cat.
Mm-hmm.
I like The Black Cat. You know, there's some good gore in it, some wonderful gore in it, like when the kids get locked up in that boathouse.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a neat twist to it, and there's a cat. It's just quirky. It's a quirky little Fulci movie that it doesn't rise to the level of some of his better films, but it's still very cool. It's also got Patrick McGee, who I'm a big fan of, and I'm Mimsy Farmer, which I could take her or leave. I don't really care. But yeah. Al Cliver, you put Al Cliver in a Fulci movie, I'm going to watch it.
Pretty much. And I mean, the one thing that always surprises me about this movie is people tend to either love it or hate it. You know, you either stand on one side or the other generally, from my experience anyway. But, you know, in horror movies throughout time, we've seen a lot of stories get retold. You know what I mean? How many times have you seen Dracula and Frankenstein and all these different retellings of these old, old horror tales? And that's probably, I mean, I think you can put Black Cat in that category right along with those as being one of the ones that's been done the most times. And if you enjoy the story of the Black Cat, right, why would you not want to see Fulci's adaptation of it? Because you know the kind of personality Fulci has with gore films, and, you know, it's a different kind of mentality than, say, you know, well, the perfect example is, and it's another Blue Underground movie, it's Two Evil Eyes. Mm-hmm. With Dario Argento's version of it in the film. I mean, look at compare those two just for an example. Look how different they are, but they're really cool tellings of the story. I really like that.
Yeah. And Fulci, Fulci, dude, I become a Fulci file. I mean, he did a lot of bad stuff. When Fulci hit, God damn did he hit. Yeah. And I know a lot of people, dude, a lot of people really, you say, let me either like it or hate it. A lot mm-hmm. of people really crap all over the Black Cat. And
they do.
There are some Fulci movies that deserve every bit of scorn they get.
Mm-hmm.
I won't lie. I'm not locked into everything Fulci made was gold, because it's not. But the Black Cat, I don't get it. I don't get why anybody would just, I mean, I could, people like really hate this movie sometimes, and I don't get it. But like I said, I love it. It's a good DVD. It's another one the Blue Underground sent me to. That's a big common theme.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I really like that film, too. You know what I mean? I think that it gets a raw deal, and especially, too, for it to get a raw deal due to the fact that, you know, oh, that movie sucks. And it's like, well, Fulci's made way worse himself.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So I never understood the hate for it either. I think it's I've seen better and I've seen worse, but it's something that I would certainly say is worth seeing, and Blue Underground gave it a good treatment.
I think this is a Blue Underground title, too, and it won't be what I'm talking about. Speaking of Fulci making a bad movie, it's Manhattan Baby.
Oh, yeah, that's a Blue Underground one, too.
And with all due respect, it's not a very good movie. It's a bad Fulci movie. It's a boring Fulci movie. The one thing I can't imagine anybody saying about The Black Cat is that it would be boring, because it's not. There's always something cool happening in The Black Cat.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Evil up. So, but that's my that was a Black Cat. That was my next choice.
My next choice here is it's an interesting movie. It's one of the Blue Underground titles that I've seen more recently, and it's great too, because this shows you even somebody like us, you know, people like us that we watch all the stuff, and we're pretty much aware of everything that's out there. And I've always heard a lot about a director named Alan Clark. He's a guy from the UK. And I'd never seen any of his movies. Well, I finally got to check out a movie with Tim Roth, who people will definitely recognize from Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction. But it's a movie called Made in Britain. And it's this movie where Tim Roth, he's very young in the movie, and he plays kind of like this badass little skinhead teenager punk kid. And he gets bounced around through the system, and he's basically going into, like, you know, boys' homes and foster home kind of stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it's a really gritty, interesting movie. And, you know, especially, too, due to the fact that, you know, Tim Roth, he's on a TV series now. He's been in a ton of American films, and people recognize who he is. And this is some of his earlier work. This is really a great example of how good of an actor Tim Roth is. He got the role by chance. It's a dramatic movie, too. It's not like your typical exploitation or horror films that Blue Underground puts out. It's rather dramatic. And it's the cinematography in it's fantastic. It's very well directed. And it's a really aggressive film, too. There's not a whole lot of, like, really vile stuff going on screen, but it's just a lot of the characters in it are really, like, shockingly real. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's and you know, if you're the type of person that when you watch a movie and you kind of put yourself in somebody's shoes, this is a great movie for that too, because it really gets a reaction out of you as the viewer, and I absolutely love the movie. I think it's highly, highly underrated. And if you guys have ever browsed Blue Underground's website and you've seen this one come up a bunch of times, and you know, you never really took a chance on it, trust me, it's worth taking a chance on. It's a great, great movie, and it's very underrated. People don't talk about it at all.
Cool. I actually had not. I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, it's different. You know what I mean? That's kind of what I wanted to do with this. Obviously, when we talked about doing the show in Blue Underground, mm-hmm. you know, I talk about some of my favorites and some of the great things that they've done. But I also wanted to bring up a few titles, too, that I think are kind of like diamonds in the rough. You know, it's easy to fall behind and get unnoticed whenever this company puts out so much great stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah. But that was my choice, and that's Made in Britain from director Alan Clark.
Well, my next one is a giallo that I really enjoyed and I've watched recently. And it's got probably the best alternate title that I've ever – it's one of those alternate titles you're like scratching your head going, guys, did you really – were you going to put that on a movie poster? And the alternate title is, What Are Those Strange Drops of Blood Doing on Jennifer's Body? This is The Case of the Bloody Iris.
Yes.
And I love this movie. It's a giallo. It's got a mystery. And it's got one of those payoffs. The motivation for the killer is just so sleazy and goofy and awesome that when you get there, you're like, holy shit, that is just out of control killer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's well-paced. There's some decent kills. There's a sleazy nightclub act. There's all these beautiful women in various stages of undress. There's a manly man that passes out at the or freezes at the sight of blood. I mean, it's awesome.
It's Euro sleaze.
Yes. I'm imagining you've seen Case of the Bloody Iris.
Yeah, I actually have. That's another really cool thing about Blue Underground, too, is they've kind of embraced the subgenre of the giallo.
Mm-hmm.
They've really put out the best of the best. Blue Underground's a great company to look at as far as that, you know, because they've released Deep Red. They're going to re-release Torso, which is an absolutely fantastic giallo.
Cannot wait for Torso.
Yeah, Torso is, I mean, if anybody out there has not seen Torso and you've heard of its reputation and you like giallos, man, you're in for a treat when this one comes out because it's fantastic. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I can't wait. And I don't actually have a copy of Torso, so I can't wait for it.
There you go.
So.
I have another one, too. And obviously, if you guys listen to the show or you read anything that I write on the internet or what have you, you know I'm a big fan of sleaze, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I'm a big fan of Euro sleaze, too. So when I found out years ago that there was a movie that had Franco Nero in it and David Hess, I was captivated. I had to see this movie. And the movie I'm talking about is called Hitchhike. This is a fantastic little exploitation flick, man. David Hess, this might be David Hess's best character.
Although, come on now.
No. What I'm going to say is, I'm not saying it's his best role or his best acting performance. It's just the character of this guy. It's almost like he's, you know, there's some twists and turns in the movie, but like the character's really a bastard. And it's not like how he is as Krug either. Like Krug's just the meanest motherfucker in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I just always took this character's Krug light.
But see, for me, it was like a more, what's the right word? Like a more conniving and sneaky version of Krug. You know what I mean? It's this guy, you're not scared of him because like Krug, he's a maniac. You're scared of this guy because he's crafty and he got a lot of tricks up his sleeve. You know what I mean? That's what I kind of liked about the character. To me, it wasn't just a total mean play on being Krug again.
You know, actually, it's funny because I also equally enjoy Hitchhike. But I think I enjoy it differently because what I enjoyed about it is the relationship between the man and his wife and how conniving and sneaky they get with each other. I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, things go on in the movie that kind of sort of you would think they would be pitted against the David Hess character, who's sort of the outsider, badass, scary guy.
But mm-hmm.
they actually go at each other. And what's important is, and what I really thought was interesting is if you watch Franco Nero movies,
mm-hmm.
he's a badass and he's a bastard in most of those movies to the women female characters around him.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first, and I haven't seen a ton of his movies, but this was the first movie where they had a strong female lead that was right there with him, giving it right back to him.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was
what really grabbed me about Hitchhike. I love that movie.
And you know what's kind of cool about this movie, too? The Franco Nero character in Hitchhike is kind of a whiny prick. You know what I mean?
He plays a lot of drunks.
And you know what? Yeah. That's not the, like, I know what you're saying, but, like, this character to me is a lot different from the other characters that he plays. And it's because the guy's really sleazy. And he's just kind of a jerk, basically. And the thing that I thought was really cool is, like, Franco Nero really got into the role. Like, he really takes charge of the role and makes it something worthwhile. Yeah. And that's the thing that I always loved about the movie, too, is it's kind of like, it's fun to watch David Hess, but then there's this contrast with Franco Nero and then this really strong female lead. And what happens is just off the charts. You know what I mean?
And the funny thing is, in any... In the end, really, the movie's just a simple road picture.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a movie, too, made for American audiences, which is really weird. A lot of times you see these exploitation films and stuff that were made to play elsewhere, you know? Yeah. Like, giallos were never made to play in America. They were made to play in Europe. Yeah. But with this movie, it was a movie made in a foreign country, but it was made for American audiences, too.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, and I'll let you in on a little sneaky secret here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge fan of Franco Nero.
Really?
Yeah, the movies I've seen him in, he's kind of a bastard, and I don't really enjoy him a whole lot. He was in a giallo that I watched recently, and it really bugged me. The giallo was interesting, but you know, I wanted somebody to root for, and he's such a bastard in that movie, a drunk, whiny drunk in that movie too. That I didn't really dig the character. But the fact that I enjoy him and enjoy his performance in Hitchhike ought to tell you how good the movie is. That's the point I'm trying to make, really, is that I'm not a huge Franco Nero fan. But damn it, he is, like, I'm agreeing with you 100%. He is so dead on awesome in this movie. And he has two really strong people to play off of. It's great.
And it's a different role for him, too. Like, you know, like you said, like you're used to him as playing kind of like the tough guy, the badass kind of guy. This one's a little bit of a transition because he's not getting by in this movie by kicking ass and, you know, like nobody can stop me. You know, I mean, it's kind of a more it's a more submissive role, I guess, you know, once David Hess gets into the picture. So I really like that. I think that it's really a different perspective on a Franco Nero kind of character than what you would normally see in his movies.
Well, I have one for you.
What's that?
It's a Dario Argento directed giallo that you should never leave home without. Yeah, I only say that because it's got Carl Malden in it. and that is, I think, and again, these aren't in the, I mean, clearly, I think one of us is probably going to bring up Suspiria.
Mm-hmm.
And so these aren't in the order of the best movies or my favorite movies. But I think Cat of Nine Tails is not appreciated as much as it should be.
No, it's not. And it's, you know what a good reason for that I think is Argento throughout the years has, you know, he's known for two things. The super artistic kind of stuff that he does in his movies with like the lighting and the shots and stuff. Yeah. And then the way he mixes in the gore stuff. Okay, and that movie does not have the typical gore that you would expect from his later films. So I think that aspect of it alone is one of the reasons why it's very underrated as a movie. People don't talk about it nearly enough. And honestly, I'll say this too, it gets overshadowed by his best work.
True. It does. You still there?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Okay. Sorry about that. You know, it's got such a great atmosphere to it, and for me, you know, when I watch a giallo, I will appreciate, you know, I appreciate some of the giallos are sleazy, I would say the giallo we talked about, Case of the Bloody Iris, one of the things that's fun about that is the amount of sleaze that's in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie has something in common with that because you could throw all these other added bonuses in and fancy camera work and incredible lighting and great cast. But if your mystery isn't interesting and if there isn't something there to draw me in and make me sit here and go, what the hell is going on? You're going to lose me. And I just think Cat of Nine Tails has a great story, has a killer ending. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And the Carl Malden character is so different from what you would expect in one of these movies. He's very good in it, and you know, and it's Argento, and it's in God, I was working on a review today, a written review, and it was for an Argento giallo, and I said, you know, Argento gets this bad rap, I think, for making movies that don't always make sense and that have like these weird, wacky, you know, plots that are all over the place and he doesn't pay attention to narrative. But if you watch it, when he makes a giallo, for the most part, they are very straight. I mean, Deep Red has a story. It's there. You might not understand it, but the reason you're not understanding is because they're not giving you the whole mystery. It's very clever.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end, it all makes sense.
Absolutely.
So I just Cat of Nine Tails. It's not as good as his best giallos, but then I can't really think of Argento ever made a bad giallo. But I would say this compared to other ones, this is a very good movie.
Absolutely, and that kind of leads me. It segues me, if you will, into the next movie I was going to talk about, and it has to do with Dario Argento. And no, it's not Suspiria. Thing is, I'm a big fan of giallos, like we've been talking about on the show. And I think when it comes to Argento giallos, or at least when it comes to giallos in general, he is one of the leading people that ever made them, in my opinion. I think he's made some fantastic movies. And to me, there's a movie that he made that has literally some of the most fine-crafted kill sequences I've ever seen in anything. And that's a movie called Opera. I think Opera is not only one of his forgotten movies for whatever reason. I mean, people talk about it, but definitely nowhere near as much as they talk about, you know, Deep Red or Suspiria. But it is really a sadistic little movie with a badass killer in it. And, I mean, it's such a tense movie, and there's some great stuff in it. And once again, Argento brings across his great sense of style. There's some wonderful camera work in the movie too. And I know a lot of horror fans kind of get thrown off because it has to do with an opera. And believe it or not, I know it sounds goofy, but like I've talked to a lot of people that can't watch the movie because of that. And it's like some of it is slow, but man, believe me, when it's not slow, it's as good as a horror film can be.
Well, and the thing with the eyelids and the rigs that he puts on her to make her watch the murders.
Mm-hmm.
That's iconic. That's killer to me. You show me a picture of just the eyes, I know what that's from.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's a fantastic movie, and it's one of the ones that, you know, for me, like, this is the way I look at it. Like, if people are going to start watching giallo films, they try and find, like, the cream of the crop, you know, the best films to watch. With giallos, you don't really have to do that. Just start watching Argento stuff, and then branch out.
Yeah.
Because his giallos are all different, too. Like, you might have something like Deep Red or Opera that have a little bit more bloodletting in it. But then you have stuff like, you know, like The Bird with the Crystal Plumage and Cat of Nine Tails that don't have that aspect of it, but really amp up the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And they're different, but they're great films.
Argento doesn't really do a lot of a sleaze.
Not in the giallos.
I can't really think of a lot of sleaze in any of his giallos.
There's really not much. Now, you know, now that you brought it up and now that I think about it, I mean, that's exactly it. He
compared to something like Iris, man. There's just, you know.
I mean, you can really tell, I think, by watching his movies that he is a student of Bava.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that does
not
play. Exactly. But like he like embodies that kind of stylish attitude with the giallo, and I think that's why a lot of his work out the best. And they're really captivating movies because of the story, because of the way it looks, because of the camera work. And I mean, to me, I just think that's like one of his strongest points.
Yep. Very cool. It's an excellent point. So, well, we've been talking about some really classic, great movies. Films that people in film school should probably study. So let me mix it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
How about some William Sanderson?
Oh, yeah. Is it that time again that we have to fight for our lives?
Exactly.
It is.
Yeah, dude. I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but they have probably one of the neatest little, brutal, neat, offensive, obnoxious exploitation flicks I've seen in a while, and that is Fight for Your Life. And it's basically these criminals break out of prison. Mm-hmm. The head criminal is a racist son of a bitch, and they take a black family hostage and just do all sorts of terrible things to the family. And even though this guy's racist, his one henchman is Asian, and his other henchman is I believe Mexican or Hispanic, mm-hmm. in some way. And he just rips on them as bad as he rips on everybody else, and says some really terribly racially offensive things. And you know, a little kid gets his head bashed in, and there's some raping, and then the tables get turned, and it's a killer freaking movie.
Yeah, it absolutely is, man. I mean, it's really one of those movies that you can't help get sucked into the story. Who the hell doesn't like to root for the good guy? And this movie really brings you into that.
Oh, yeah.
It's offensive. It doesn't give a fuck. This, to me, is essentially what the exploitation era of filmmaking was all about. This is a movie that could not compete with the big studios and what they were doing, but they could bring subject matter into the fold that can make a film way more powerful than 90% of the stuff that was being made by the big studios.
Yep. They were like, like you said, they didn't have the budget, but they were like, we'll put stuff on the screen you wouldn't dare.
Yeah. And it's crazy, too, because like you said about William Sanderson, if you don't know who William Sanderson is, he's been in a ton of movies.
My other brother, Daryl.
From the Newhart Show, absolutely. And, I mean, isn't it really, like, as a fan of movies like this, we kind of know what to expect when we watch stuff like this. But, I mean, really, isn't it one of those eye-popping moments when you hear and see the stuff that he's doing on screen and you're holy shit, this is insane.
You're, like, sitting there going, dude, you had giant cojones. Because it could very easily have turned around on you. You never could have worked again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really ballsy film, man. I mean, that's the thing that...
Made by a dentist.
Yeah, that's true, too. But it's just one of them things where, for me anyway, as a fan of exploitation cinema, whether you like the movie or you don't, to me, it's almost irrelevant. It's just, how can you not see the big set of fucking brass balls that were there when this movie was being made? By all accounts, by all the actors, by the people who worked on it. I mean, these are people that really took the stuff seriously and made a hell of a film, too.
And they just went for it.
Absolutely.
So.
100%. And since we're talking about offensive movies, man, they're, put it this way, in the years and years that I've been watching stuff like this, I don't know if I've ever seen a more offensive movie than this. A lot of people say when it comes to racially offensive movies and stuff like that, that like one of the titles I hear a lot is Mandingo.
Yeah.
And it is. It's a very offensive movie. But there's a movie to me that takes the Mandingo thing and takes it about a million times too far. And kudos to Blue Underground for putting this out. They did a really great job with the disc, and it has to be seen to be believed. It was made by a pair of filmmakers that people remember from the Mondo Cane series. And Jacopetti and Prosperi are the guys' names. And this movie is called Goodbye, Uncle Tom. Hmm. This movie, okay, let me just put this at people. This movie, first off, was advertised to be the first motion picture based on historical facts about slavery in America. Okay? But when you watch this movie, it's a really weird and strange portrayal of how slavery occurred years ago. You would be really hard-pressed to think that the people who made this movie weren't complete racists. It depicts slaves as people who want to do nothing other than fucking eat. Mm-hmm. And but the thing is, now let me clarify, because it sounds like this movie's nothing but hatred and just horrible stuff. But the demeanor that they bring out the subject matter, not only is it captivating, but it's just mind-boggling, okay? And this is a movie of epic proportions. There are literally scenes in this movie where, there's no less than 2,000 slaves running around in one scene.
Yeah.
It's a really fantastical, like, it's really hard to verbalize about what makes this movie so unique. But I guarantee you, if you ever watch this movie, you will be blown away by it. Whether it's by the ignorance or how well it's made or what is it, but it's a very interesting movie. I wouldn't bring it up on here if it wasn't.
The bit with the gelding is what always got me, dude.
It's, you know, it's incredibly, I don't want to just say
those
ignorant.
Those people that grew up on a farm or don't know what that is, it's a fairly unpleasant procedure to a male, livestock, and they're doing it to these fellers, so.
Yeah, and it's really an offensive, brutal film. I mean, it's not easy to sit through, especially, I'm sorry, but I wouldn't imagine what it would be like to be a black person watching this movie. It would probably be pretty bad. But this movie played in grindhouses. Mm-hmm. They showed this publicly. You know what I mean? And yep. And the thing is, whether something's right or wrong, to me, it's irrelevant. It's the fact that this movie's available and out there for people to see. And it's definitely worth watching at least once just due to the fact that it's such a big production. Mm-hmm. And if you like stuff like Mandingo or if you have an interest in something like that, watch this, because it's an even better made film than Mandingo is.
You know, the only thing I'll say about this is I understand where you're coming from. I watched it in the privacy of my own living room.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it very difficult to get through. I didn't enjoy it at all. But everything you said is true.
Not it's a unique film. Said,
but this is not going to be one that I... You know, you can watch something like Fight for Your Life and you can have fun with it because, you know, the bad guys get it in the end and everything. And it feels like a movie.
Mm-hmm.
This other one just... I mean, it's very well made and I completely agree with what you said, but it just there's a mean spiritedness to it that I had difficulty with.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you. That's the one thing that I want to get across right here when I'm talking about this movie. It's a really unique experience, and it's something that, like, you know, I think if people sit through it, they'll be appreciative of the experience in and of itself. But it's not I don't condone the film. I don't think the subject matter is necessarily right in the film either. You know, slavery shouldn't be depicted as a good thing, or at least something where people are content with.
They were trying to basically be offensive, and they succeeded.
100%, and it's to the point.
People, so.
And to the point of basically putting themselves out there as racists.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And you don't. And once again, I do have to say this too. Not that I agree with the filmmakers, but you have to admire the set of brass balls that takes.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean. So these guys went for it and they made it. And I guarantee you. And this is the reason why I bring this up. Watch Goodbye, Uncle Tom. You've never seen another movie like it.
Never will either, probably.
And never will. I agree 100%.
So, well, I tell you what, we're going to take a quick break. We've chattered on here for about a half hour, 40 minutes. So we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more Blue Underground. I'll have another title for you. Okay?
Uh-huh. Sounds
right.
Good.
We'll be back right after this on the Gut Munchers podcast.
When was the last time a movie froze you to your seat, made your palms sweat, quickened your pulse? Cat o' Nine Tails really does the job. National General Pictures presents Cat o' Nine Tails, from the same masters of tension who paralyzed audiences with Bird with the Crystal Plumage, the picture that out-psychoed Psycho. Cat o' Nine Tails, starring Carl Malden, James Franciscus, and Catherine Spock. It's nine times more suspenseful than Bird with the Crystal Plumage. Cat of Nine Tails. Rated GP, all ages parental guidance.
Hey fans, it's Ken Forey. Just want to tell you about Mail Order Zombie. Great company. They review zombie films, any zombie film, every zombie film. And it's something you should tune into. So if you get a chance, go to the website, look these guys up, Mail Order Zombie, and find out what the hot zombie films are today. What's going on? These guys are right on the cutting edge of reviewing zombie movies. And if you're a zombie, or you want to be a zombie, or you're thinking about being a zombie, or your mom's a zombie, your dad's a zombie, or your damn mother-in-law's a zombie, tune in to Mail Order Zombie, baby. You'll find out what's going on. Ken Forey, and that's out.
Because of the grisly subject matter presented in the motion picture, The Gates of Hell, no person under 17 years of age will be admitted to the theater unless they are accompanied by a parent or certified adult guardian. The Gates of Hell will be shown in its uncut version, and some people may find certain scenes shocking. Again, we repeat, no one under 17 years of age will be admitted to The Gates of Hell unless they are accompanied by a parent or certified adult guardian.
And we're back, and we're going to talk some more Blue Underground goodness. So the next title I have picked out is unique from I think their catalog. Maybe not entirely unique, but one of the cast members of this movie actually, I think, has a huge man crush on Man Ed. And that would be the Lucio Fulci classic, City of the Living Dead, with Giovanni Lombardo Radici, a.k.a. I loves me some Ed Demko.
John Morgan.
Yeah, John and hey, Morgan.
If anybody's going to have a man crush on me, I suppose that I have no problem with it being Giovanni Lombardo Radici.
Well, they did put his head in a drill press, so.
Hey, you can't go wrong with that, right? Yeah, that movie is fantastic, isn't it?
It is. It's a great movie, and we talked about this. I think on was the second podcast we did, first podcast.
Yeah.
Was the first? I think it was the first one we did was the Fulci Show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a lot much more to talk about beyond that. It's a great movie. It's a Fulci movie. It's a classic movie. Anybody that doesn't think City of the Living Dead falls into the big three of great Fulci films that he made right there during his career, it's crazy. Yeah. And this is another classic from Fulci. And, you know, I just want to point out already how many great movies from Fulci and Argento we've already talked about that Blue Underground has put out. They have an incredible catalog.
Absolutely. I mean, that's probably the first way I got introduced to Blue Underground. It was either with those ones or with The Crazies being released, which is a really cool movie too, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the one thing. See, that's the really cool thing about Blue Underground is they are – not only do they just put out these type of grindhouse or drive-in flicks or what have you, they really tend to stick with – specific directors.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They've released a lot of Larry Clark's titles, some George Romero titles, you know, Fulci and Argento, Jess Franco, Tinto Brass. I mean, there's a lot of people that they've released a handful of movies of theirs.
Yep. Yep. So, I wanted to throw the Fulci film in there because of their titles, it is one of my favorites. So.
And here's a really good title that I wanted to talk about. You know, a lot of people, you know, especially when you talk about exploitation films, there's a bunch of different variations of them. And one of the most whacked out and weird ones that you'll ever find are the Nazi exploitation films. And my favorite one that I've ever seen is from a director by the name of Tinto Brass, who did not really direct the shitty Caligula that everybody hates. And the movie I'm talking about is called Salon Kitty. It's one of the – and it's another epic film, too. With these elaborate sets and just some of the weirdest shit you'll see on screen. But the thing about this movie is not the subject matter in it. It's how well the movie's made, in my opinion.
I haven't actually seen this. I've owned a copy of Salon Kitty for 2 years. And it sat on the bottom of a stack of DVDs that are my you know, we all have our I need to watch these DVDs pile. And mm-hmm. I haven't watched it yet. I keep meaning to. So maybe I'll have to get off my butt and actually watch The Long Kitty.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. And it's, you know, it's another one, too, just to watch due to the fact that it's this epic production of you know, a Nazi film. You know, and there's some atrocities in it. There's a lot of sleaze and, you know, and I think and it has a really good story to it, too. It's not just about Nazis and shit like that. It has to do with a whorehouse and the madams and spies and a lot of cool shit. It's a really, really good movie. Highly recommend that one.
Cool. Well, I'm going to get away from the Italians with my next choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to get to somebody who's probably just about as American as you can get. Actually, I think he might be Canadian. No, I think he's American. He's American. That would be my man, Bob Clark.
Oh, yeah.
The movie I'm talking about is a very interesting take on a zombie film and a very interesting take. Early commentary, I think, on Vietnam, and that would be Death Dream.
Which, absolutely.
If you guys don't know what Death Dream is, Vietnam, a guy is killed in Vietnam. His family gets a letter. He's dead. And then all of a sudden, he comes knocking at the door. And they're so happy he's home that I don't really think that they realize he's actually dead. And to me, this movie has very much that, you know, the story about the monkey paw and the woman wishes her son back and he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
She wished so hard he came back. It never really goes into great detail, but you kind of get the idea that his mother wished so hard for her son to be home that he came home. But he's not right.
Absolutely. And it's a highly underrated movie, too.
Yeah. And not only is it underrated, but it's very powerful. There's some very heavy-duty stuff going on in this movie. And directed beautifully by the legendary Bob Clark.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's so weird to think that this is the same guy that did Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things. And it's just such a different movie.
Mm-hmm.
Such a different kind of movie. But I really do enjoy Death Dream. And it's one of those films from Blue Underground that... I don't know that I'll revisit a whole lot because it is difficult and powerful with some of the things that happen and because it's big. It's an issue movie that deals mm-hmm. with issues. But it is a movie that I think I'll probably end up watching every few years.
And it's
a must own for collectors.
And it's also noteworthy, too, because I believe that's the first on-screen credit of Tom Savini.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
So it's actually another notable on that one as well. Aha.
And of course, Alan Ormsby. So there you go.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I mean, that's one too. To be honest with you, Death Dream is one of those movies that I've seen years ago, and whenever I pass along the movie to other people to check out, they always like it.
Mm-hmm.
People always like, even non-horror fans. I think if they watch it, especially if they're older, lived through the Vietnam era, they will appreciate the film and what it's trying to say. I think it's a really well-constructed movie, and it's really, you know, it's a great film, and people don't really give it the respect, in my opinion, that it deserves. So it's a good choice on your part as well.
Totally agree.
And I have another film here, too, that to me gets criminally overshadowed by another film that the director made. And he's one of my favorite directors due to the fact that he shoots all of his movies in New York City. The movie I was talking about that overshadows this one is Maniac. And the director I'm talking about is William Lustig, or Bill Lustig. And the movie I'm talking about is Vigilante.
Okay, Vigilante is a good movie. Robert Forster, Fred Williamson, that's some good stuff. The Hammer.
Not to mention the fact that Joe Spinell shows up as a sleazy attorney.
Yeah, you know, dude, that special, I think it was a special feature, I think, where Bill Lustig was talking about, and I know he tells the story a lot of different places, but Spinell's mom is an extra in a lot of these movies.
Uh-huh.
And that scene they shot, the very small scene that he shot for the courtroom, he was like late. He didn't show up. And when he got there, his mom was like screaming at him in front of everybody. That every time I see that movie and see that sequence, it pops into my head right there.
And you know what's really cool, too? It's not really cool, but it shows you the mark of how great of an actor I think that Joe Spinell is. I think Joe Spinell, for having a small role in that film, is really good as the sleazy attorney. And if you know anything about Joe Spinell, you know around that time he wasn't doing too good.
Yeah.
But he really does pull it together and does a really good – I mean, it's always been a memorable cameo to me in that movie.
This is funny, because I remember not liking Joe Spinell all that much, and I remember Russ giving me, kept saying, oh, I can't love Maniac, how can you love Not Love Maniac, Russ from, Runk Russ Rutter from Slasher Club.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I got to agree with Russ on this one. Spinell's really grown on me. I love his performance in Maniac. I agree with you 110%. His performance here is fantastic. And I mean, I even caught a lot of heat because I really, really enjoyed, that Troma release. Was it the last horror film?
Yeah. Yeah.
I really enjoyed it, and it was like, well, it's just a lot of, it's just him running around with a camera. And I'm like, you know what, dude, you could probably have an hour and a half of Joe Spinell sitting at a table,
mm-hmm.
with a camera on him and him just telling stories and being stupid. And I would watch it. He's just a fascinating guy to me. I get it now. See, I always go back and watch things, because I always tease you about certain movies. But I always mm-hmm. go back and watch things that other people love, because I'm mm-hmm. always hoping maybe it'll click with me and I'll get it. And Maniac is one of those movies. And so his – I agree with you. And I know we're talking about Vigilante, but I agree with you. His little cameo there is great. You know, and dude, I mean, Vigilante is what it is. I think it's kind of cheesy. It always comes off to me as sort of cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair – I mean, you know, and I think I'm comparing it to the kinds of movies it was trying to be like. To be fair to me, you know, it's trying to be like a Death Wish movie, and I think Death Wish is a much
yeah.
better film.
So do I.
But I like Bill Lustig. I like the guys that are in this movie, and I will admit, watching the movie is a good time.
Mm-hmm.
It is 100%. A very good time.
Absolutely.
And again, it's not one of those. It's not a movie that I would consider boring or anything like that. I mean, Blue Underground does a wonderful job on these releases.
Yeah, and I believe that one's a two disc too.
Yeah. Yep. So, all right, I got one for you.
Okay.
If you look at George Romero's career, I think there's one movie that deserves a lot more attention than it ever receives from anyone,
mm-hmm.
and that is The Crazies. I love The Crazies. To me, The Crazies is probably the second best non-zombie film that George Romero made. The Crazies is a great movie, and just to let you know, or just let the, for, if you haven't seen it, there's an airplane crash, this virus gets spread into the small town, and they get quarantined, and the virus actually makes you go crazy, which is why it's called The Crazies. There's a lot of familiar faces from some of his other films. Also, one of my favorite actresses, and ironically somebody I'm going to get to meet again at Cinema Wasteland, the mm-hmm. lovely Lynn Lowry is in this movie. This is probably one of my favorite Lynn Lowry movies. You got Richard Liberty. I mean, there's just so many great people in this movie, and I love it. This is another one of those Romero movies that I don't understand why people aren't into it. You show it to them, and to me, it's every bit is entertaining. Maybe not Dawn of the Dead for me is kind of like way up there, but I consider The Crazies in its own way. I know there's the budget isn't there, and I know there's some things, maybe it's a little bit slow at times, but in its own way, I think The Crazies can be every bit as entertaining as Night of the Living Dead or as Day of the Dead. I don't think it's as good as those movies, but I think it's as fun, you know? So
yeah. It's, and once again, too, just like I said with Blue Underground's catalog, it's kind of easy for that film to be underrated whenever the director did the Dead films and Creepshow and mm-hmm. the incredibly brilliant Martin. But, you know, I mean, it is a really good movie.
You know, Martin's right up there with There's Always Vanilla, because that's another brilliant movie.
Oh, God, yeah, I'm not even going to act like he made that. But anyway... But, yeah, I mean, I really do like The Crazies, too. And it's another example of a DVD that other companies would have put out because Romero's name was on it.
Yeah.
But Blue Underground really took the time out to put a good edition of it out.
Exactly, because other people would have put it out for Romero's name. They'd have put out a cheap version from the maker of Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, Night of the Living Dead, and they'd have thrown it out there. Blue Underground actually put it out there because I think they think it's a good movie.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, that's the thing, too, with Blue Underground, man. They put the care into their titles. I mean, if you look through the collection of stuff, I mean, if you're a horror fan and you're kind of like thinking that we're full of shit here, go look at the Blue Underground titles you have in your collection.
Exactly.
I guarantee you there's a ton of stuff on them. The prints are always stellar, you know, and they do a really good job with every release. They show these movies a tremendous amount of respect, and that's what we look for as genre fans.
Yep. I agree.
But I have another one. And, you know, we keep talking about masters of horror, you know what I mean, with like Argento and Fulci and Romero and stuff like that. There is one name when it comes to masters of Italian crime films. The guy's name is Enzo Castellari, okay? Mm-hmm. And the movie I want to talk about features one of my favorite genre actors, Fabio Testi, okay? And the movie's called The Big Racket. The Big Racket is one of my favorite Italian crime movies ever. There's a shitload of action in this thing. It's basically Fabio Testi stars as like a cop, and you know, he's trying to break up like a protection racket that's going on in the city. And it's like these gang members, like these guys, like go into places and they like take them over, and it's the whole like, you know, the mobs kind of run in the city.
Yeah.
And the people want to take it back. And it's just really, I mean, basically the best way to explain it is it's a badass little action crime film. And it's one of my favorites. It's one of the best of any kind that I've ever seen. And if people out there recognize the name Enzo Castellari, they know of you know, stuff like Kanoma and Inglourious Basterds and stuff like that. I mean, this is up there with those films. This, it might even be better.
Cool.
But I figured I had to name that one. That's definitely a must-buy Italian crime film.
I have not heard of that one.
It will not disappoint you, I promise you that.
Cool. Well, I'm going to back, and I'm going to back to another Fulci film.
Okay, do it.
And this is one where I think a lot of people don't get into it as much. Again, this is another one I enjoyed, but I don't know how much other people enjoy it. And that's Don't Torture a Duckling.
I love it.
It's kind of a giallo, and it's got some. There are a couple of featured gore scenes that I think are a little weak in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the last one, I think, is a little bad. But the rest of the movie is really solid, and it's creepy, it's goofy, it's engaging. You'll definitely be wanting to watch to see what happens next. But I like Don't Torture a Duckling.
Yeah, I think it's, in my opinion, I think that's probably Fulci's most underrated movie. I think it's fantastic. I think the subject matter in the movie is way ahead of its time. It's really the first film, I think, of Fulci's that you get a sense of the Fulci gore, even though there's not a lot of gore in it. I mean, the gore type, you know what I mean? It's kind of the first taste of what was to come in his career.
Yeah.
And plus it has Barbara Boucher in it, who is like one of the hottest women ever.
Oh yeah.
Ever. And she's all kinds of naked.
Really, really, really pissed off the Catholic Church.
Yes.
So
something that Fulci was good at.
Yeah. But I mean, this is the one where the church declared, I mean, I was watching some of the special features or listening to commentary on it. I think it was commentary on it. I remember something on either special features or commentary said this was the one where the church just declared outright war on Fulci.
Oh yeah, and it's not surprising.
I can't really tell you why they did because it's a spoiler. But yeah, if you watch this movie, you're going to get to a point. And it's funny now because now we're desensitized to things. So we're like, oh whatever. But at the time, living in Italy in that time period, it was like, oh my God, how could you do that?
Yeah, it was really defacing something that people found really valuable and endearing to their lives, so I guess they're going to take it to a further extreme, so to speak.
And me, it gives me the giggles to think that he really pissed him off that bad.
Yep, you and me both.
Yeah, that's funny. So
I have another film here, and out of all the stuff that we've been talking about here, we haven't talked about anything science fiction, okay? This is a movie I know that you like, and I really enjoyed it too. And plus, it stars Ian McCullough, so how can you go wrong with that, right? The movie's from director Luigi Cozzi, and it's a total alien ripoff, and it kicks a lot of ass, and there's some really gory shit in this one. It's called Contamination, Some people might know of it as Toxic Spawn or Alien Contamination because that's a public domain title. But Blue Underground did a great job with the DVD for Contamination.
I've never seen the Blue Underground DVD.
Yeah, it's cleaned up really nice. It's kind of cool, too, because I know that you saw, I believe you saw Alien Contamination, like the public domain one. It's like, you know how there's a lot of those, like the eggs are kind of like glowing and stuff like that? On the Blue Underground version of it, because I remember after we spoke about this, because I had watched the movie and then you told me a little while afterwards that you'd saw this cool movie and you explained it to me and we figured out it was the same movie.
Yeah.
I went back and checked because I have the same disc that the public domain one's on. And you should see the difference in like the glowing and the atmosphere of the movie and everything. It's pretty neat. They did a really great job with it. But it's a really underrated movie, too, that I don't think a lot of people have seen.
I won't disagree with that. I mean, I do like the movie. I haven't seen the Blue Underground version, but I've seen the movie. And for me, it's goofy as hell.
It is.
The ending at the plantation... I don't want to give anything else away, but there's this, the ending part at the plantation is just goofier than shit.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting there watching, going, what the hell am I watching? It's hilarious. It's entertaining. I don't know if they meant it to be entertaining in the way it's entertaining, but it is entertaining. So they achieved, I mean, what the hell else do you want out of a movie? It's supposed to be entertainment. So
absolutely.
But, yeah, no, I could see why that wouldn't be on your list.
100%.
Interesting little flick. So, all right, dude. You know me. I mean, I can't help it. I got to talk about another classic.
Okay.
And this one I have recently reviewed for Gut Munchers, and it is a classic. I gave it 4 out of 4. And I had gone back and forth in debating what was the greatest giallo of all time, my favorite giallo.
And I think you agree with me now, don't you?
My final two were both Argento movies. And the one that I think, though, actually is probably the best one I've ever seen is Deep Red.
There you go.
And what can you say about a movie like Deep Red? It's a mystery. You know, in this one, there's a musician who witnesses a murder, and there's a twist, and he becomes obsessed with trying to figure out who the murderer is, and then there's this nosy-ass reporter that basically throws his picture and name all over the front page saying he can identify the killer, so the killer comes after the musician, which gives him even more reason to figure out who the killer is. You think you got it in the end, and there's another twist, and then there's a twist that goes back to the beginning, and it's a whole thing, and it's amazing. I'm being very careful not to give anything away, but this has the absolute best executed twist of any movie that I've seen probably since The Sixth Sense, which The Sixth Sense pulled the wool over my eyes. And I'm not trying to say that M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong is an Argento level filmmaker. I'm just saying that that's one movie that I normally don't get fooled by. I don't get fooled by movies very often. And the last movie to fool me like this, like Deep Red fooled me, would have been something like The Sixth Sense. So there's an excellent twist. And again, it's Argento's masterpiece. It's still my second favorite Argento movie, but it's a masterpiece from Argento. The fact that one filmmaker has a movie like Deep Red and has a movie like Suspiria on his filmography, those two movies alone make him one of the best directors of all time.
And
he's got a lot of other good stuff too, but.
Yeah, you know, I don't disagree with you there. Argento's one of my favorites. He's been for a long time. I think Deep Red's brilliant. It's my favorite giallo film that I've ever seen. And I think that I do this. I tend to do this with people because I think it's important, okay? So I'm going to do it now. If you've never seen Deep Red and you decide that you're going to sit down and watch it, I will tell you one thing. Watch The Mirrors, okay? That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to explain anymore. Watch The Mirrors.
Yeah. And you know what? Most people still won't catch it.
I know.
That's just how awesome the movie is.
I mean, it really, like, honestly, like, that gets me giddy, about, like, talking about this movie. Like, isn't that one of the coolest little things that anybody's ever put in a horror film? I mean, that's so cool. I mean, that's the thing about that movie. I think that's why I love that movie so much. Because You know how a lot of times in movies when you're watching like this big mystery and you're like, yeah, anybody could figure this out. Argento actually puts you in a position to figure it out if you're smart enough to catch it.
Yep.
And it's not like anything in the story that you wouldn't understand because it's not, I mean, you would notice this if you pay attention. And it makes the movie to me. I mean, I think it's a brilliant little plot device. And you, oh my God, dude, when you're talking about, you know, all these movies and how great they are, I don't know if there's ever been another movie except for maybe Suspiria that uses its soundtrack as good as Deep Red does.
Deep Red, I think, is the first collaboration between Argento and Goblin.
Yep, absolutely.
The soundtrack, it's one of those things. And should it be surprising that my favorite two Argento movies, and I think the two greatest films he made, two classic films, both are scored by Goblin, and they both have that very unique, distinct. When you hear within 5 seconds of the song, of the title for Deep Red, you know what you're watching.
Yep, absolutely. And it's just a fantastic movie all around. There's some creepy stuff in it. There's a lot of stylish shooting by Argento, which comes to be expected. You have David Warbeck.
Yeah.
Or no, is it David Warbeck?
No, it's not David. It's
David Hemmings.
Hemmings.
Yeah, David Hemmings is awesome. I mean, he's really – and he's the lead guy. You know what I mean?
This is probably the best David Hemmings – movie David Hemmings was ever in. I mean, he did a lot of other shitty movies. And he did some other movies that were kind of decent, but I don't think I've seen him better than he is in this movie.
Yeah, it's a fantastic movie all around. I really think it's among the best stuff that Argento's ever done. To me, it's my favorite Argento movie, and it's my favorite, you know, giallo, as I said earlier. Mm-hmm. But it's amazing to me, too, considering how different that and Suspiria are. But at the same time, in the way that they look and act and move and talk, that they're very similar.
Yeah.
You know, I love that. I agree 100%. That's a great choice. Can't argue with that. One I wanted to bring up, this movie's very underrated. It's a foreign film, but to a lot of people, it's going to come off just like it was made in, you know, the United States in the 80s. It also stars my man crush, if you will. And it's a movie called Stage Fright.
Oh, I love Stage Fright.
Yeah, it's a really, really good little slasher movie.
Yeah.
It has some of the coolest shots, some of the coolest death scenes, and it has a giant killer bird in it, if you will.
The director of Stage Fright is Michael Suave, right?
Yeah, the director of Cemetery Man and The Church, too. But, Stage Fright's a blast, man. I mean, that's – you know what the reason why I wanted to bring this one up is because for some reason it even seems with people that are really hardcore slasher fans, for some reason Stage Fright seems to fall underneath the radar.
And you know what's funny is one of the cool things about running the website is we got a copy of Stage Fright to review. And I still had my I realized after getting it that I had my old Anchor Bay release.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave the copy to one of my staff members to watch and review. It was my friend Jeremy, who had never seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
And he lost his shit over this movie. He just went, wow. He's like, where has this movie been my whole life? And I'm just like, dude, there are so many more things you have no clue that are out there that you're going to get to watch. It's one of the fun things about doing the site is exposing people to things that you love. Because I knew that Stage Fright is a great movie, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to hook a brother up, and he's going to flip out over this.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, he did. He really enjoyed it. He got a kick out of it. So gave it a really good review. But I love this movie. Slasher film. It's very iconic. It's very cool with the giant bird head and chasing people around. The kills are fun, and it's not as stylized as some of the other Italian films are, but mm-hmm. It's just a damn fun time. And as far as slasher films go, it gets it. It knows what you want. It knows what it needs to deliver, and it delivers it. And it's paced well, and it's a blast.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So. That's a good one. I'm going to get really weird on you.
Okay.
Because I want to talk a little bit about a movie that stars Kirk Douglas, Martin Sheen, James Tarantino, Ron O'Neill, Superfly himself.
Oh, shit.
Final Countdown.
I'm just really happy you didn't have to sing the cheesy 80s band song that's called The Final Countdown, but you said that.
There's video of me from two... There's video of me from two... Probably, I think it was 2 years ago on New Year's Eve. I had busted out. This is before my heart attack, so I was still drinking a little bit now and then. And I'd busted out, and I had, let's say, an ample sampling of my 15-year-old double malt scotch. And there's actual video of my friend and I standing in front of the TV belting out karaoke of The Final Countdown. So I shall not be singing that song again anytime soon. There's video evidence of how poorly I was able, when I sobered up and actually watched it, to realize, wow, I even intoxicated and uninhibited, I still can't carry a tune. But yeah, anyway, so don't worry. There's no fear of that. This is one of my favorite movies as a kid. Watching it on VHS, watching it when we first got HBO. My parents are really picky, and this is a PG. It was a PG movie. I'm also a big history buff, big World War II buff. So, you know, the whole idea of this modern American carrier going back in time. And the plot is there's this weird vortex thing, and a U.S. carrier gets pulled back in time and is able to intercept the Japanese at Pearl Harbor and try to save it. And, of course, I don't want to ruin the movie, but history does not get changed. But there's an incredible cast. It's a very intelligent movie because they, you know, instead of just doing it, they debate, is this something we should do? You know, the fact that people discuss it and debate it, and it's a very well-made movie. I love they do some really incredible it's fight scenes, basically, between two Japanese Zeros and a couple of F-14 Tomcats.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just one of my childhood favorites, and it also holds up. I watched it recently, probably about a year and a half ago, that I watched it, but it does hold up, and it is a fantastic film.
Cool.
And you know, with the rest of Blue Underground's catalog, I get the feeling whoever runs this company, and we both kind of runs a company, but the people that are in charge of the company and work and acquire films, I think they're movie nerds. Because if you look at the rest of their catalog, The Final Countdown sort of sticks out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this really – I mean, it's not in itself an odd movie, but compared to the rest of their catalog, you're like, you got a lot of these Italian movies. You have Fulci films. You have gore. You have spaghetti westerns. You got all – and then you got The Final Countdown.
Yeah, absolutely.
Somebody probably said, shit, this ain't out. It's available, and it's a cool movie.
Mm-hmm.
I just get that vibe from Blue Underground, because if you look at their catalog, they just put out cool shit.
And, you know, that kind of leads me to the next thing I was going to talk about, too, because there's nobody that's really as cool as this guy was, literally and figuratively. Unfortunately, he has recently passed away. It's another reason why I wanted to bring it up here. And these are two really cool movies. I really like them. And it's been a while since I've seen either one of them. But the movies I'm talking about are Cannonball and Circle of Iron. And the guy I'm talking about is, unfortunately, the late David Carradine.
You know, wasn't he also in Q?
Yeah, he's also in Q the Winged Serpent, yeah, too. Yeah, good call. Another Blue Underground title.
Blue Underground title, and it's directed by Larry Cohen.
Yep, absolutely.
So that was on my list too. Q is another one of those films that's great. Yeah,
but you know, I mean, it's cool because it's like, you know, ever since I was a little kid, I remember David Carradine, you know, from Kung Fu and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
He was always, you just got this vibe like he's a cool guy. You know what I mean? Like he's hip to whatever, and the shit in the world doesn't bother him. You know, whatever.
He'll tie a string to his nutsack and yank it off while he's hanging himself. He's just down with everything, man.
Oh, too soon, man. Too soon. But yeah, man. I mean, I always thought Cannonball was kind of a fun, stupid movie, and I always got a kick out of it. And Circle of Iron to me is awesome. I mean, any movie.
See Circle of Iron yet? I'm so dying to see that movie.
I mean, dude, put it this way. There's a movie that it's based off a story written by Bruce Lee. It has David Carradine, Christopher Lee, Eli Wallach, and Roddy McDowall in it.
Yeah, I'm sold.
You know what I mean?
Oh, he's awesome.
Yeah, and it's a really I really like Circle of Iron. It's an amazing little movie, and they have a cool two-disc special edition of it out too, with a bunch of stuff on it too. And David Carradine shows up on the discs too because, you know, hey, he's a cool guy.
Oh, yeah, and then Cue the Winged Serpent's a great movie too. Larry Cohen, Quetzalcoatl coming to New York City, eats a chick in a bikini off a rooftop. Great.
Know who else is in that?
Hmm.
Shaft himself, Richard Roundtree.
Richard Roundtree's in that movie.
But yeah, I mean, I really think Q's an underrated movie, too. Like, I think about most of Larry Clark's stuff, to be honest with you. I've always thought he was one of the more solid directors, too. And they have a really great... unfortunately, it's out of print, but I do have it because I'm
Larry
awesome.
Cohen, right?
Yeah, the Larry Cohen collection, I was going to say, with God Told Me To, which is a very, very underrated movie, too. And Bone, which is really good, too. It's another great movie with Yaphet Kotto.
Still have yet to see Bone. I keep meaning to.
Yeah, Bone's pretty interesting. It's a little bit different, and it's kind of like it's a less brash version of Fight for Your Life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Yaphet Kotto plays this guy who is just sick of the way he's treated because he's black. And gets involved with this guy and his wife, and it's a unique movie. I haven't seen a lot of stuff that's like it, and Yaphet Kotto's pretty damn good in it. So,
yep, I've got a zombie movie for you.
Oh no!
And this is actually, I believe, it's a Spanish director.
Okay.
It's kind of one of those mixed countries. A couple of people funded it, but they have a wonderful two-disc special edition. And that's The Living Dead at Manchester Morgue.
Oh, yeah. I thought that's where you're going with it. Yeah. That's a really underrated zombie film, and they really did it justice with that two-disc special edition.
Just so everybody's clear, that it's also known as Let Sleeping Corpses Lie. The two-disc set's under the original title. Let Sleeping Corpses Lie is the one-disc version of it.
Mm-hmm.
For $5, get the second-disc version. I have the two-disc version, and it's a great movie. Just your typical zombie film. You know, it's kind of got a technological reason why the zombies are rising, which I thought was kind of interesting. And it's relentless. It just keeps punching away at you one thing after another. I love the ending. I really love the ending of this movie. I thought it was killer. And it's a kick-ass zombie movie, dude.
Yeah, it's really underrated too. It's amazing too how many of the movies that we talked about, I think, on here are underrated amongst horror fans.
Yeah.
And that's another fine example too of a movie that if you see it and you like it and you like kind of give it to other horror fans that you know that haven't seen it, they always like it.
Well, you know, I think the key is the reason this one might be a little underrated is. It's my understanding that originally, now the Let Sleeping Corpses Lie from Blue Underground is still, I think, uncut.
Mm-hmm.
But I think under that title, this movie got butchered to hell.
It did. Yeah, that's
so
exactly what happened.
People who had seen it maybe back on the VHS or back in the day are going to be like, that movie was a piece of crap. No. Blue Underground put it back the way it was meant to be seen, and it'll blow your doors off.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And that leads me to the next movie that I was going to talk about, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's a zombie film, but it's a zombie film of another sort. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm a big fan of trash. I love trash cinema, okay? And there is a guy that is the king of trash. Bruno Mattei is his name.
Oh, yeah.
The movie is known as Virus, Night of the Zombies, and Zombie Creeping Flesh. But they've released another title, Hell of the Living Dead. What an awesome piece of trash this movie is.
It's a shitty movie, and it's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah,
it
is.
It rips off the soundtrack to Dawn of the Dead.
Directly, yeah.
It rips off of even the blue jumpsuits in Dawn of the Dead. But, man, it amazes me, too, because I know me and you have had this conversation a million times about how, you know, Last House on the Left's a great film, and then all these Italian knockoffs of it are awesome, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what Hell of the Living Dead is. It's just a knockoff that happens to work. It has the right things in it at the right times, and it works because
footage inserted that doesn't match the rest of the shots. Characters randomly wanting to put dresses on, and guy, men like holding dresses up themselves, putting their gun down and dancing into zombies. It's just a randomest, most screwed up shit. It's got an ending that'll leave your head scratching, and it's a shitty movie that is just it's awesomely shitty.
Yes. It's like, you know how you always hear the so bad it's good thing when it comes to movies? This is a movie to me where it's the case.
Exactly.
It's so bad, it's good. It gives you right what you want. I mean, that's the thing. Let's be honest, too. A lot of times when you're disappointed in the movie, it's because the movie's trying to be something it's not, or it's just misrepresenting itself. This movie doesn't promise to be anything more than a fucking shitty zombie ripoff, and that's what it is.
And it does it good.
It does it very good. Yeah, I agree.
Does it well, I should say. It does it good. I speak English good.
And it has one of the most sleazy characters ever.
Oh, yeah.
There's a guy in the movie that in the middle of a zombie holocaust going on, all he could talk about is getting some ass.
Oh, yeah.
So, perfect time.
Oh, yeah. I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to have a quick break here. We've chattered on for a bit. We'll come back and do a few more, and then we'll wrap it up. What do you think?
Sounds good, man.
All right, so we'll be right back. We'll be back right after this on the Gut Munchers podcast.
Roses are red, violets are blue, but the iris is the flower that will mean the end of it.
Suspiria, the most terrifying film you've ever heard. Rated R, under 17, not admitted without parent.
The Toolbox Murders.
No. No.
A deadly craftsman made ordinary tools weapons of destruction. With drills, nail guns, and hammers, he clawed and bludgeoned his way into the lives of innocent victims. The Toolbox Murders. No one could guess his true identity until it was too late. The Toolbox Murders. A Cal-Am artist release. Rated R under 17. Not admitted without parent.
Hey, we're back. Well, all right, Ed. Let's continue this discussion. It's my turn.
Sounds good.
I got you a great movie. You're going to love this one. It's what a little movie called McCrabby.
Oh, yeah. McCrabby's a great movie.
Yeah. It's actually, guys, I know it's macabre, so please get off my ass. Lamberto Bava directs it. Interesting cast. Best jump out of nowhere. Effed up. What the hell just happened ending to any movie I have ever seen? And even up to that point, it was just very creepy, psychological, fucked up. You kind of knew what was going on, but you didn't want to believe it. The chick in this movie has a real problem.
Yes.
But again, at the end, Bava just throws in this, you know, I've built this very psychologically tense movie. And then at the end, I'm just going to fuck with you. And that's what he does. And it's awesome.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, too. You know, when people talk about Lamberto Bava, you hear about demons a lot. You know what I mean? And a lot of people think that's probably his best film.
I think
this one might be his best film.
I also really like A Blade in the Dark.
So do I.
Because I think A Blade in the Dark's a really good movie, too.
No, I do, too. And it's amazing to me because, to me, it's weird because on the show, like, I guess it's a recurring theme of how stuff's overrated or underrated or what have you. Mm-hmm. To me, it's like by now Demons has become a little overrated, even though I do like it. And to me, stuff like this one and Blade in the Dark, and even to another extent, almost for me, Demons 2 is a little bit underrated too, because I think that movie's a lot of fun.
I don't like Demons 2 all that much. If the only Lamberto Bava movie you ever watched, in my opinion, was Demons, you'd probably think the guy was a hack compared to his father.
Yeah.
If you watch something like A Blade in the Dark or Macabre, and all of a sudden it starts to occur to you, this guy's really a good filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
He can make some great things. And then you realize he also worked with, you know, he worked with Argento. He worked with his father. He knows how to make a good film. And it just, to me, I think it's kind of ironic that the two movies that people probably most recognize him for are maybe not the best ones in his film catalog. But for some reason, it's not for some reason. They are kind of fun to watch. But Demons and Demons 2, because of the first film, I think have a following, have a cult following around them. Well, I think by far they're not his greatest movies.
No, but they're probably his most easily accessible, I guess, for audiences.
True.
You know what I mean? They're not. They're just zombie movies, for lack of a better way to explain it.
I agree with that, because if you're not really into like the Italian scene and watching a lot of the giallos, and you're not accustomed to the kind of the pacing of an Italian film, mm-hmm. you're probably going to get really annoyed with Macabre. I can't say it right now. It's goofing around.
Macabre.
You're going to be annoyed with it, I think, probably fairly quickly, just because you're maybe not in that mindset of watching those films. But I personally think it's a much better made movie. And I that's mm-hmm. why I mentioned it. I think it's really great.
Yeah, I agree too. And moving on here, this is actually kind of interesting. You brought up Lamberto Bava. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bring up a movie that may have been done by him or may have been done by his dad. It's a little interesting movie that I really like that Blue Underground's released, and it's called Shock.
Yes.
I think this is really weird, because this movie was released on video as Beyond the Door 2, which is so strange because they're nothing alike. If you guys don't know, Beyond the Door is basically like an Exorcist ripoff. And this movie's nothing like that at all. And, you know, it's kind of an interesting movie to me due to the fact that I think both Lamberto and Mario both directed a lot of the stuff in this movie. And that to me is pretty unique. And it has Dario Nicolodi in it, who is, you know, Asia Carrera's mom, if you will. So, can't really argue with that, but I really like Shock. I think it's an underrated movie due to the fact that, like, the first time I seen it, I didn't even know it was Mario Bava. So, you know, it's not the best Mario Bava film, but it's still a damn good horror film, I think.
I can see that. So, my next choice has one unique thing.
What's that?
If you've ever wanted to see a movie with random footage of a native dude getting busy with a pig piggy, this is not a good movie. It's directed by Sergio Martino, it's Mountain of the Cannibal God. I like it though.
I like it too.
It's a guilty pleasure. There's a lot of stupid inserts. I think this is the one where they like try to put like a green thing over a dude's arm as he's trying to feed something to a snake or something.
Yeah. Yep.
It's like a really shitty thing to do. And it's poorly made, and you're watching, what the hell were they thinking? It's got Stacy Keach and Ursula Andress, so there's, like, talented people in the movie. And it's just screwed up, but basically there's a scene with a guy, you know, pretend humping a pig. God, I hope he's pretend humping a pig.
Yes.
And there's a lot of other really crappy things in the movie, and it's just, it's a really bad cannibal movie, but Mountain of the Cannibal God still... The best part about Blue Underground, a lot of people would jack you for $30 or something like this. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at their list price. It's $9.95. So they don't jack you over for it. And I like it. I like it at that price. It's not a great movie, but it's one that I wanted to mention because it's oddball. And it's weird enough that I think people should check it out.
And I totally agree with you there. And I have another movie, too, that I wanted to bring up that I think is the same kind of thing. It's really oddball, and it's a really unique kind of film. And if you guys out there listening to this like movies like Henry or Maniac, stuff like that, you'll like this movie. Trust me. It's a movie called Cannibal Man that, first off, has one of the best DVD covers I've ever seen, which features a guy with a meat cleaver right in his face. But this movie is kind of cool. There's some really good gore in the movie. But it basically has to do with this guy who's a slaughterhouse worker. He kills a guy in a fight, and from that point on is going completely insane. But basically he starts killing people and disposes his victims in a pretty unique way. And I'm sure you could figure out by the title of the movie, Cannibal Man.
Yeah. They don't exactly make it sneaky, do they?
No. Have you ever seen Cannibal Man?
No.
It's a cool movie. Definitely, it's not as like, I know that I said it's like Maniac and it's like Henry, but it's only really like them in, as far as it being a character study. The movie's really kind of a enthralling thing where, like, you're just watching this guy go through these motions and the stupid ideas that come into his head. And it's really, to me, there's some dark humor in it. And it's a different kind of movie. And I'm glad that Blue Underground actually put this one out, because I really enjoyed it when I seen it. And I think a lot of other people will, too.
Well, I got another one for you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is we're going to jump over to an American slasher film.
Mm-hmm.
This one I really kind of like, but I like it more for the gore than I do the story. Though I think you recently said you watched it was better than you remember it, so I think I'm going to revisit it as part of my slasher review month or month of slashers, and that is the Joseph Zito directed Prowler, The Prowler.
Yes.
To me, the best thing about The Prowler and the reason that's really watchable is the effects work from Tom Savini.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're just kick-ass. Hands down, just killer effects work. Was right when he was in his prime. Joseph Zito knows how to direct a slasher movie, obviously. He directed, Final Chapter?
Mm-hmm. Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th series. So it's directed well. I think the story's a little lame. I love the look of the killer. You know, and I'm going to have to go back and revisit it, because it might be better than I remember it being. I have the DVD from Blue Underground. Ha-ha. I wanted to mention The Prowler, because this is a great... Again, it's another one of those things for how many companies would have put the time and effort into the movie that they did.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what is kind of almost an effects reel for Tom Savini in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and it actually has his home video footage.
Yeah.
As a special feature on there. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I did go back and rewatch this one, and this is one that I was never really too fond of. I would completely agree. It has really good effects. And but, you know, I was always kind of just, I don't know, wanting more from the story, I guess, would be the best way to explain it.
That's kind of how I felt with it.
But you know what? I have to say that I did watch it recently, and for some reason it really played well to me this time. I don't know if it's, you know, like if you see it the first time, you're going to be disappointed because you don't, you know, the story's light and kind of predictable, to be honest with you. But, you know, kind of after you've gotten over that and you go back and watch it again, you can appreciate it for what it is. And what it's trying to be is a balls out, gory slasher movie. And the kill scenes in it are fantastic. They're shot well. Like you said, the look of the killer is really cool. And to be honest with you, it's not to me, it's kind of like, you know, like the smart kid in class that always gets A's.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the smart kid trying to coast through class with a C.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's still pretty fun. You know, it's I've seen a lot worse. And I'll tell you right now, I've watched The Prowler a bunch of times, like a handful of times over my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the greatest slasher I've ever seen. But I can say this. I will go back and watch it again. You know what
it's
I mean?
Fun.
So
it's worth watching for the kills.
Absolutely. And it would have played great in front of a grindhouse crowd, yeah, for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's a really, you know, it's one that a lot of people talk of, I think, a little too fondly. But at the same time, though, it's not really bad to deserve some sort of, like, universal bashing by horror fans either. You know what I mean?
If you're a gorehound, I can see why you would love this movie.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot in it. To be honest with you,
they know what they do well in this movie, and they do it.
Yeah, it doesn't pretend to be anything more than what it is. If you're completely content with just watching a slasher film that has a shitload of blood and guts in it, and especially if you're into Savini effects, and a lot of horror fans are, they still swear by them as being like the best ones that they've ever seen in horror films, then you'll love it. There's no doubt in my mind that it's a movie that you will absolutely love.
Yep. I completely agree.
And I have another one I wanted to mention on here too. It's part of a series, and I recommend the entire series. But I just wanted to talk about this one specifically on here because I'm trying to keep the porn to a minimum, so to speak. And these aren't actual hardcore pornography or anything, but it's the Midnight Blue Collection. I think they're excellent and they're very interesting, you know, that show, the Midnight Blue shows from New York Cable Access Television, which basically featured a lot of adult stars. Mm-hmm. But the one that I wanted to talk about that I think's fantastic, it's absolutely one of the most interesting documentaries I've ever seen. It's volume 5 in that series, and it's called Porn King. And it's all about Screw Magazine and Midnight Blue's Al Goldstein. And if you know who Al Goldstein is, he's basically a smut peddler. And he has one of the most interesting lives out of anybody I've ever seen. He basically worked himself up to be a multimillionaire through Screw Magazine and working in the adult industry for, you know, reviewing films. And basically now he's homeless. And it shows you all of this over the course of the documentary. And it's just a look basic. Even if you don't have any interest in pornography or adult films, to me, it's just a look at one of the most interesting people in publishing, too, you know, from a publishing standpoint. And Al Goldstein's such an outrageous personality. Believe me, you'll be entertained by him throughout, because the guy's one of the biggest knuckleheads I've ever seen, and he's really entertaining.
Cool. Well, I'm going to tell you my next choice.
Okay.
And of all the movies we've talked about,
mm-hmm.
this is probably the one. I won't say it's the best movie,
mm-hmm.
but if I had to pick one, in other words, if you told me I was allowed to pick one movie out of the entire Blue Underground catalog, and it was the only Blue Underground movie I was allowed to take with me on a trip,
uh-huh.
it would be this one. And it's probably going to shock you a little bit, but I love it.
What's that?
Shockwaves. With Peter Cushing, Brooke Adams, John Carradine, Nazi zombies. I love Shockwaves.
You know, I love the movie too. But I watched this one fairly recently again too. And the one thing that every time I watch it, I'm always so amazed by. And you're talking a movie with Nazi zombies, mm-hmm. John Carradine's in it, Peter Cushing's in it, you know, so it has some stuff to pay attention to, right? You know with who the biggest star of that movie is to me?
Mm-mm.
The atmosphere.
Yeah.
It really, and I love this movie too, because I think it's a great example that, you know how like a lot of horror fans are always hardcore that horror needs to be R-rated and that's the way it should be. And
exactly, yeah.
It shows you that you can make one hell of a little horror film and it could be PG-rated.
This movie's creepy as hell and there's not a drop of blood in the whole movie.
None. And damn it. Dude, aren't those are some of my favorite zombies of all time, too.
The zombie
just the
effects,
look of them.
The look of
just,
them.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. They walk. See, that's another thing that I really like, too, and it kind of really popped in my head last time I watched it. You know how everybody always goes nuts about the zombie versus the shark scene in Zombie?
Mm-hmm.
This is the first zombie movie that I really remember. The zombies are just kind of like walking around in the water, and that's where they live, and it doesn't, you know what I mean? It's like it's nothing to them.
Yeah, and you realize this actually also kind of fits in that Nazi exploitation category.
Yeah, it does.
And it is probably, dude. I can't even tell you. There's something about this movie. I mean, it's like you say, it's PG. So the movie that I watch in my DVD basically is the same movie that I used to watch when I was 9 and 10,
mm-hmm.
sitting watching The Late Show. Yeah, the movie scared the shit out of me then. It doesn't scare me as much as it did then, but the atmosphere is still there. I still acknowledge the atmosphere. It's killer. It's wonderful. It's a great movie. I love the sound effects. I love – dude, even before they get to the – it's one of those movies that even before they get to the island and it's just the people on the boat bickering and John Carradine and the cook and the first mate and the couples,
mm-hmm.
that still is so damn interesting. It's because they have a good cast, good direction. They have dialogue. The characters are realistic. The crusty boat captain is realistic. And, of course, they get to the island and things just even get better from that on out.
You know, whenever they get to the island and they're kind of standing there like they're in Peter Cushing's, like, mm-hmm. You know, home or whatever you want to call it. That is some of the greatest set design.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure that's probably what the place looked like. It was just an abandoned place, so there might not have been that much design to go into it. But it's one hell of a place to shoot. It's a great location, and it really makes the movie, man.
It does. It does. And it again, Shockwaves. I know there's some wonderful movies in Blue Underground, but that's just a movie, one of my personal favorite movies of all time.
You know, it for some reason, that movie does have a hell of a replay value. I agree. I've seen the movie so many times, and I can watch it whenever.
You can just watch it again and again and again. I mean, that's just with me. It's just like, well, shit, I can watch this movie as many times as I want to.
Yeah.
I never get bored.
It's not boring. No. It's not at all. I mean, there's so much cool stuff in that movie. And it's just such a different... See, that's what I like. You know what I mean? Like, we talked about the Blind Dead films earlier. I really like an original approach to the zombie film, which you don't really see at all anymore.
No, you don't.
And that one is certainly one of the most original that I can think of.
Yeah, again, like you said with the Blind Dead films, they were a zombie film that wasn't a ripoff of George Romero. The Death Dream from Bob Clark, it's the same thing. It's a zombie film, basically, but it's not a zombie film like Romero made. It takes a zombie, but it does something different with them. And Shockwaves is the same way.
Yep. 100%.
Because the thing about Shockwaves, these zombies think, and they're going to look, they will hunt you down and kick your ass.
Yeah.
And they're not there. They're not mindless. They're not just there to kill and consume you. They just want to kill you because that basically that's what they enjoy.
Yeah, and I really like this idea that there was these experiments going on, and it was a mistake, and they realized it was a mistake, so they figured they could just seclude it to this little area.
Yeah.
You know, that's a really cool aspect, and it adds to that. Sometimes I think that's one of the better elements in horror, is when you take people and you put them in an atmosphere where it's like, well, you have no right being here. And then bad stuff starts happening.
Yeah.
You know, there's a great interaction with the cast where they don't get along. You know what? One of my favorite scenes in that movie is the scene where they're all being chased by these things and they're all, you know, freaking out. And they hide in a giant refrigerator.
Yeah.
And the guy's freaking out because he's claustrophobic. That's a great scene.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah, but it's a really good movie. And I think that it... you know, from a lot of people, it doesn't get the respect that it deserves, in my opinion, anyway, you know?
Yep. I agree. So what do you got? You got anything left?
You know what? I'll just bring out one more here, and there's a good reason for it. In the world of exploitation and sleaze, the name Emmanuel is pretty well known, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's been a whole bunch of Emmanuel films, and a lot of them are terrible, okay? But people think they're good because the Emmanuel thing pops in their mind. Blue Underground actually put out the greatest Emmanuel film, in my opinion, ever. It's one of the sleaziest, nastiest movies that I've ever seen of this type. And it stars the great, the beautiful, the most awesome Laura Gemser. And this is Joe D'Amato's classic, Emmanuel in America. This movie features a scene with a woman and a horse. This movie gets way sleazier than any of the other ones that I've ever seen. It's kind of like they knew that this was going to be like the Emmanuel film. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to sexploitation movies, and it's still kind of epic too in its own way. And it's actually a really good movie by Joe D'Amato too.
I have another one, and I don't know why nobody calls it what it is, but I kind of think that not only does this have – well, okay. This is a movie directed by Bill Lustig, who – and the cast is like a who's who of 70s cinema. And it's also, in a lot of ways, a slasher film. And it was made, I think, in the 90s. And that is Uncle Sam.
Yes.
Bo
Uncle
Hopkins,
Sam.
Robert Forrester, P.J. Souls, William Smith, and Isaac Hayes. Just think about those five names I just said. These are guys that were in a ton of stuff. And it's about basically an Iraq War veteran, so it would have been the 90s, who comes back. He dies and he's shipped back home, and I forget what brings him back to life, but he basically goes on a killing spree for anybody who's not patriotic or he doesn't like, and it's honestly, I mean, the hell do you want, dude? He dresses starts off in camouflage fatigues, and then ends up dressing like Uncle Sam and goes on a killing rampage. He's a slasher. Do you disagree it's a slasher movie?
No, I think it is a slasher movie.
And it's funny because if you think about it, that might be the best slasher movie of the 90s.
Yeah, it might be. you know what I think's hilarious about this movie?
Mm.
You say about slasher movies that are made for holidays, you know,
yeah.
Like you have Silent Night, Deadly Night, and you have Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one for the 4th of July.
Yeah, it is. It really is because it takes place on the 4th of July.
Uh-huh. 4th of July weekend.
Don't they use the town ceremonial cannon to kill him or something like that?
I think so. Yeah. It's been a little while since I've seen it.
Talk about a movie that just doesn't get any play with horror fans. If you say it's Uncle Sam, people will roll their eyes, and you start mentioning the cast, and like, well, whatever. And then you mention it was directed by Bill Lustig. People are like, oh, and then they watch it and they go, wait a minute, this isn't as bad as I thought it was.
Yeah, and you know what else cracks me up about this movie too? I really like Isaac Hayes as like the Korean War guy,
yeah,
you know, like
yeah.
The vet, and he's part of the deal. And I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a fun little movie. It's really different than Lustig's other stuff.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
You know, I'm just sad that that this didn't get more play because I think I really do think Bill Lustig basically made a pretty interesting and fun slasher movie. During a decade where everybody said, well, the slasher movies are dead and they're not making any. And it's like, well, yeah, he just made one. I caught this on video when it first came out. I loved it. I bought the DVD the first chance I had to buy it. It's in my collection. And I don't break it out every 4th of July, but when I have people over and we're going to watch a movie and it's kind of over the 4th of July holiday, shit, buddy, I got Uncle Sam. Let's watch it.
Yeah. I mean, it's... You know, it's kind of unfortunate, I think, because the movie came out in, I think it was 97 or 98, something like that.
Was it that late?
Yeah. And
wow.
You know what? You know this. I mean, I don't know if you're going to know it when I ask you here, but I know that you know this. Where was Bill Lustig's audience built from?
Grindhouse.
And how many grindhouses were around in 1997?
Zero.
There you go. I think that's essentially the major problem.
Dude, this movie should have been a hit on video.
It should have, but it's weird because the business itself, or just the whole movie watching kind of thing, was different.
Yeah, then. And that's interesting because I think I mentioned that on a message board somewhere. We were having a discussion about the 90s and whose fault it was that horror died. And I actually put out there and said, you know, I think people's viewing habits had changed. People weren't in the mood to watch horror films. That wasn't what they were into at the time. And, you know, you have 9/11, all of a sudden all these horror movies start showing back up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like the country psyche. It's groupthink a little bit where, I mean, because you even talk to people like myself who are really big horror fans and have been since I was a kid. I will honestly say during the 90s, I guess I could kind of blame it on there wasn't anything for me to watch, but even the stuff that I owned, that I loved, that I knew I liked, I hardly ever watched. I think I was just in a different place. And I think as a society, we go through these spurts where a lot – I mean, there's always the hardcore fan that never gives up. And at this point, I'll probably always be watching horror. But, I mean, even somebody who was into it like myself, I just was watching other things.
Yeah, I was pretty much the same way, too. I would, you know, still go to the video store or break something out of my own collection, you know, that would all, I mean, I could pretty much say I think that at no point in my life after I've originally seen them did I ever not watch Halloween or the Friday the 13th movies or stuff like that. You know, I always kind of revisited that stuff during different points of the year. But, yeah, I mean, they're just – the country was different then. You know, that's when, like, the internet was getting kickstarted and just the world was kind of a different place. You know, there was
– yay.
Yeah, in the 90s was the big AIDS thing. That's when everybody was starting to become enlightened on what AIDS was and it was being acknowledged by the country. And I think that people kind of looked at life a little bit differently then. It was the first age basically where people were forced to be – kind of conscious of what they were doing all the time. You know, it wasn't the 80s where everything just kind of seemed like it was going hectic, or the 70s where there was a lot of political struggles going on in the country. And same thing could be said for the 60s. But, you know, once the 90s came around, it was kind of like almost this country came into its own a little bit. Financially, it was doing a little bit better. It was starting to drag its ass out of the hole a little bit. And sadly, I think it's gone a little bit backwards since then, too, on people's outlook on life. You know, in the 90s, people had a pretty positive outlook on a lot of stuff. And, you know, and that drives horror. You know, I mean, you said that, and I sincerely believe that the sign of the times is the way that the horror industry works. So,
well, and I personally think when real life gets really shitty,
mm-hmm.
is when people want escapism, and that's when they'll get into horror films.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you guys don't remember, but I remember in the early to mid 80s, everybody was pretty sure that the Cold War, that Russia was going to lose the Cold War, that things were going to melt down, they were eventually just going to fire some nukes. So people used to walk around thinking, this could be the last day of the rest of my life, because friggin' the world could end today, because the Ruskies could lose their minds and be done with it. And then you had some great horror. The turmoil of Vietnam created a lot of wonderful horror films in the late 60s and early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
The beginnings of the Cold War and that sort of paranoia created these wonderful movies of the 50s. You know, the Great Depression created escapism for the 30s and late, you know, right through maybe even to the early 40s with World War II.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look when the great Universal Creatures, I mean, the last great Universal creature was created in the 50s. That was a creature from the Black Lagoon. You had, you know, the beginning of the Cold War. Before that was the Wolfman in the 40s. You had the war in Europe and America getting sucked into it. And then in the 30s with the Depression, you had Dracula and Frankenstein and the Mummy. So I just, you know, hopefully with the world being as shitty as it looks like it's going to be, we're going to get some great horror.
Let's hope so.
I just hope they quit remaking shit and make something original.
Yeah, because it's getting kind of frustrating at this point. But
I think I've gotten pretty much the end of the things I know I wanted to mention. This is not at all a – believe it or not, people, if you're not aware of what Blue Underground has out there, this is not comprehensive. This is not everything in their catalog. This is not all the good stuff in their catalog. You notice we didn't even mention things like Zombie. We didn't even mention Bird with the Crystal Plumage. I don't know that we mentioned some of the other giallos that they put out.
We didn't even really bring up Suspiria. We mentioned it, but we didn't
talk about Suspiria, which is a great movie. And how could we not talk about Suspiria?
And they have a great 2-disc special edition of it too.
Yeah. So I mean, there's some stuff out there. Some Larry Cohen stuff. Fulci, Argento. I mean, I don't even know we did that much Italian crime. We mentioned the one. Heck, we didn't mention the Toolbox Murders, which I just recently watched, which I dig.
Mm-hmm.
So I think bottom line is that Blue Underground really is one of the best companies going and really is worth checking out.
Yep.
And I don't know whether you would agree or disagree with me on that. I think you agree with me.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think that's our Blue Underground show. I mean, we've given them much love.
Absolutely. Much deserved love, too.
Yeah. Guys, just do a Google search for Blue Underground and hit their website. Or mm-hmm. I think it's blueunderground.com.
blue/underground.com.
Well, there you go. Check out their catalog. Check out what's out there. They are awesome. If you're interested in a movie but you don't know whether you should see it or not, I almost can guarantee you that most of their catalog has either been reviewed over at gutmunchers.com or at bloodtypeonline.com. I think we've hit most of the catalog, maybe not so much the Westerns, but the Italian stuff and the exploitation movies, I bet you we've covered.
Yeah, and on top of that, too, if you guys go to their website, they have trailers for everything, too. So even if you're just, you know, you might not be completely sold and you don't want to buy the stuff, go on their website, check out some of the trailers. It's free entertainment.
And if you have a question about a movie that we talked about or a movie that maybe we didn't talk about that you're interested in and you think Ed and I might have seen it, give me a ring – or a ring. Send me an email at gutmunchers@gutmunchers.com. That's gutmunchers@gutmunchers.com. I spell that quite a bit if you can't tell. And not only will I answer your email question, but I might even be able to steer you in a direction of somebody who can either give you a review or perhaps steer you in the direction of a written review somewhere.
Absolutely.
But also I wanted to put out there, if anybody has any questions you'd like us to answer on the show, use that same email address. Or you can go to our website, go to the staff page, click on my section of the staff page, and that'll email me. You can email me any of those questions you might like us to answer. Those can be directed at myself. I can toss those at Ed, Jason, Steve, or all of us could answer the question. So be happy to do that. So, Ed, if I have a question for you, the next segment from somebody out there, when you do your mom and pop segment, mm-hmm. You'll know where it came from.
Absolutely.
So, but I think that wraps up the bonus show. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. I know I enjoyed doing it. And I don't want to do too many of these bonus shows because they get burned out. But I think this was a pretty easy one.
Oh, yeah. It was easy for me. That's for sure. I love Blue Underground.
Yeah, Blue Underground is awesome.
You are about to face the screen's most horrifying challenge.
I see something.
It's your boyfriend.
No, let's get out of here. Somebody out there.
You are about to face... Maniac. Tonight won't be like other nights. Tonight, terror is waiting. Something's out there. Vicious, without pity. Turning the air thick with fear. A madman's out there. A step too quick. Dangerously strong, and your blood will stain the dark streets. You are about to experience horror more real than anything you could ever imagine.
I told you not to go out tonight.
You're about to experience Maniac. You'll tear the life out of you. An analysis film's release. No one under 17 admitted.
Deep, deeper, deepest. From beneath the living, from beyond the dead, to the depths of Hell's Ocean. Shockwaves. Something unspeakable has risen. Shockwaves. From Joseph Brenner, rated PG. Starring the Masters of Shock, Peter Cushing and John Carradine. Plunging you deep, deeper, deepest into Shockwaves. The deep end of horror.
Another exciting segment for Sensei Cinema. That's a lot of S's. And here's another one. Steve!
Hello!
How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good.
Pretty good? I am really excited about this one. Not that I'm not really excited, but I got to watch one of the movies that we're talking about, and it is unlike any other samurai film I've ever seen, so... Without further ado, I'm going to get out of the way and let you talk a little bit about what we're talking about in this segment.
Alrighty. It's a trilogy of movies made by the actor who was in the Blind Swordsman Zakuichi movies.
Love those movies.
Yeah. I mean, I like them, but they're a lot more subdued. And if you see this actor in this character, it's very strange. It's called Hanzo the Razor. They made them three movies from 72 to 74, and the first one is called the Sword of Vengeance. No, Sword of Justice, and basically it looks like they took their cue from Dirty Harry. Definitely, I mean the way he walks, the way he responds to his superiors, it's just like a Dirty Harry movie, except it's in feudal Japan. And he just goes crazy on his on his superiors talking back, and one of the most weirdest things about this is he has a little training he does every morning.
Yeah, a little bit weird.
yeah.
No, dude. Well,
two trainings. There's if you count the he has two little servants with him who basically I guess he helped them not go to prison and now they owe their freedom to him, so he is like his little cohorts. And he I guess he's like a petty officer. I don't even know if we call him a samurai, but
I think he's like a magistrate or something, where he, like you say, because when you draw on the Dirty Harry comparison, he is like a cop, basically.
Yeah,
and he's got like his two little informants that he saved that he uses to, you know, basically they owe him so much he can trust them that they would never do anything.
And it's very, I mean, even at the beginning, he kind of kneels down and they put weights or big stones on his knee and he's kneeling down on a very weird looking board. It's kind of got little points to it everywhere. And I mean, and his legs are bleeding. He's covered with scars. And I guess the best part is, at least the interesting part is his kind of training montage where he trains his penis. He's got a little wooden thing like a cut board, and it's been, I guess, either he cut it or his tallywhacker cut away the wood, and he just basically sits there with a little stick and just starts beating on it.
Yeah.
And then
I love the cutout because they're basically, by showing you the cutout, it's like, yeah, he's like, you know, got an elephant trunk there or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, he does and he cuts the shit out of it, right? Basically beating on it and just like cuts it. And then remember, he like goes and then he like sort of like humps a bag of salt.
Is it salt or rice? Because I couldn't tell.
It might have been. It was like saltpeter or something like that.
And then they have a camera inside the bag, and it's out of focus, but you see something pink come in.
Actually, dude, that's Wang Cam. That's when he like is.
Yeah.
And I kind of made that up, Wang Cam. But I was like, holy shit! I'm like seeing like a POV from his Wang. So again, this is the strangest samurai movie I've ever seen.
I went to school with somebody named Wang Cam. No. But, yeah, I mean, and then from there you get a shadow of him pumping that and the rice or whatever falling out of the bag. It's just nuts. But for some reason I've watched this movie three times or recently, but I can't remember the whole freaking plot of it. Okay, yeah, I mean, he finds some guy who's supposed to have been in prison, and then it's kind of like a conspiracy. They found out that someone took his place.
Remember, he's chasing the one guy who committed a petty crime, and he's, like, chasing him, and the guy's pleading for mercy, and he basically lets him know. He's like, yeah, there's this, like, famous criminal that was, like, everybody knows about who was supposedly thrown in jail. I love this part because the guy's like, he's out, and I can tell you. And instead of just, like, basically taking the guy – and take him into custody and you know, basically, or letting him go after getting the information. Remember, he, like, smashes the dude's nose?
And then
tells everybody he's dead. Because he, like, totally screws the guy's face up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. They hide him up in his secret compartment in his house.
Yeah.
His house is completely full of traps and stuff, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, and then... I guess to me, it was really it's a strange movie because, you know, then you like you get that the guy that was supposed to be in jail and he unravels a mystery. And I don't really want to spoil much of it, but he unravels a mystery. And then he gets involved with the court.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like all in this, like you say, he's a Dirty Harry kind of. That's a great way of saying it, because he's like, it's the weirdest samurai movie because he's basically like totally disrespectful, does things his own way. And then. There are two occasions in this movie where he interrogates.
Oh yeah, that's the best part.
These ladies,
or yeah, he. Well, he puts his penis training to work. Him and his cohorts, they take the chick and they put her in a big net and they hang her up, and then he lays down with his hands behind his head, and they basically lower him over the penis, and
he sort of like, you know.
skewers her. And then the best part is they just start spinning her.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, no, no. But the great part about the movie, this twice they deal with this in the movie, where he's interrogating these women. And it's the second one's when they spin her. The other one, he just got her on the – he got the different one on a boat. But it's great because they both basically – apparently his Wang is so magical and trained that, you know, they both fall for him.
Yeah, no, he goes – and after a while you think they're screaming and then they start screaming don't stop.
Yeah.
And that's how he gets them to talk.
And he stops. He's like, you will tell me. And, you know, they give him some information and then he'll like, you know – start up again and he'll stop. They're like, no, no. He's like, tell me what you know. Yeah, dude. Seriously, Hanzo the Razor Sword of Justice is wow. Dude, this thing.
Kids, if you're a man, if you're gonna die, if you're a man, if you're a woman, you're gonna get spun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. And you know, I've never seen a samurai film that I would say was kind of a little bit sleazy, and this one was. Do you know now, did this have like an American influence on it a lot? Because we say the Dirty Harry thing and then the whole sexual thing. That's kind of weird. If I've ever seen a samurai film that I thought might have been made for like an American audience or maybe even with like a grindhouse in mind, it'd be these. Do you know any history on this? Or
I was thinking they were never released in America. If they were, they probably would just released on home video years later. But I doubt they were released theatrically anywhere in America. But I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I mean, this is such a strange combination of things. But it's, you know, the great thing is you have these odd scenes that you'd never expect in a samurai movie. In the training montage where he's basically like abusing himself and I guess callousing it up so he doesn't feel anything. But then at the same time, it's still a really good samurai movie because you're like you say, these assassins. Basically, Hanzo keeps pissing people off.
Yeah.
The assassins show up, and his whole house is like full of gadgets. And there's some great like traditional sword fighting stuff. You there?
Yeah, there's a lot of arterial bleeding.
Oh yeah, the blood sprays. I don't know. Do limbs still flying? I think some of the limbs fly.
Limbs fly? I'm not sure. I can't remember if any, but I know there's a lot of arterial blood spray. So,
yeah, and it's weird because like, and the one thing that I thought was really very interesting is how they end the movie. And I don't know if you remember
yes.
how they end it, but basically Hanzo mm-hmm. is completely disrespectful, and the movie starts off with I guess him. He's in that thing where he's like, you know. We're not protecting the little guy. We're, you know, the merchants and the rich people get protection, but the regular people, the peasants don't. And he, like, takes a stand, and then, like, you never really, like, hear it because basically it's Hanzo then, like, abusing the shit out of all these people to get to the bottom of this mystery. But these are all, like, well-to-do people he's doing it to. But then mm-hmm. at the end, when he sees the girl, the poor girl, her brother – and they have a terminally ill father who's in a great deal of pain. And it's like Hanzo, like, bends no rules. He's, like, completely severe with people. And then they end the movie with him just, like, basically, I guess you'd say, bending the rules for these peasants. And it gets back to – he's you know, to me, it almost got back to kind of like him just being tired of people with money and power getting over on everybody.
Yeah. And then you can see the kids, after he pulls strings them up, they got little smiles on their face.
Yeah. Yeah, basically this, he follows this girl home, he sees something's up, just to let everybody know. And the girls are trying to kill her father, who's in terrible pain, and is begging to be killed. And Hanzo has a doctor come out, and the guy doctor, you know, gives him a medicine to make him feel better, like basically a painkiller. I think it's like opium or morphine mm-hmm. or something. And then he says, you know, this guy's going to die a painful death. So basically, Hanzo was threatening the girl with crucifixion for patricide if she killed her father, and you can't kill the father, and blah, blah, blah. And then he orders everybody out, strings them up, and then basically makes it look like the guy committed suicide. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just – it's funny because there's, like, some things that will jump out to you that are, like, really crazy, like with all the techniques he uses on the ladies that I thought was just killer, dude. just incredible. But then it flips around and it's a really good a really good traditional samurai film too. So I don't know, man. It's got a lot of little stuff in it. It just freaking killer. I'm glad you recommended. I checked it out and I did. But here's the funny thing. I guess there's two more that I haven't seen. So
yeah, I just want to make one more comment about it. At the very last end of the movie, you remember him walking in the dark, and then all of a sudden he's on a map of Japan or something. That is freaking awesome looking.
Yeah, the way they do that.
And then the music as well is like a temporary 70s cop movie kind of music, or even almost a cop TV show music. So I really thought that was a cool scene. But, yeah, they made three of these, and I hear people like the second one better. The first one I kind of like a lot more than the others, especially also the visuals. It was just more – The DVD of the first one is a lot more vibrant in colors. I don't know. The second two seem to be a little bit off, but, I mean, they still look good. The second one starts off pretty quickly where they find a body of a young lady in a barn or something, and him and Hanzo and his two cohorts find that she's been raped she wasn't raped, but she has blood around her vag, and of course he knows immediately that she's had an abortion, which leads them to some kind of cult where this lady is she's doing abortions and then taking these chicks' money, and then they have to get naked and lay with her and all kinds of crazy stuff. And from there, he takes the head lady there. I guess he's, I don't know if you call her a priestess or what, but he takes her home and gives her the spin penis treatment to get some more information. And he of course takes her in the hot tub. He has a hot tub he likes to use, and gets some more information. He finds out there's a convent that is having wild parties and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And then they find out that the convent is almost like selling the young nuns to these rich guys, especially their virginity, and doing all kinds of wild stuff. And there's a few ninja fights and a couple lords with a swords guy who challenging Hanzo, which they have a fight near the end of the movie. I mean, it's better than I thought it was. I'll be honest. The second two, what I used to do is eat a lot of Chinese, and if you eat 2 pounds of food, you're gonna pass out. And that's what I used to do is pass out. And so it took me a while to watch the second one. The second time around, I got to watch it all pretty straight through. But the first time I got the movies, it was rough. It's the same principle here. I don't think he does a lot of penis whacking in this movie, but he does a lot of spinning.
Once you've established the penis training, you'd have to do the montage again, really, though, you know?
Yeah, not the whole montage, but I mean, I think if my memory serves me right, he got to the spinning pretty quickly in the second one, this one's called The Snare. Like I say, it's all right. I don't know. There's something about the first one I like better. I don't know, because I guess it's the first time you're introduced to this wackiness.
Now, can I ask you another question?
Sure.
I know, like, with the – I just got done watching the Mikogami trilogy. I was doing my research. They, I guess, filmed all three of those movies together with the idea of cutting them into three films.
Mm.
And they came out – two of them came out in the same year, and one of them came out the following year. But it basically were, like, shot back to back to back. Do you know if the Hanzo films are shot like that, or is there some time in between them?
I mean, I as much information as I got, I did not see anything that said they were shot back to back. They were actually shot by three different directors, so I think that
probably means no.
Yeah, so that's what I looked at earlier today to make sure. I said maybe the guy who – I know the guy who – the actor, I think he had a lot of involvement in the movies. But
it's amazing because he's a really – I always liked him from the Blind Swordsman stuff. But he's a really great actor because this is a completely different character.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, it made me really appreciate the Blind Swords. By the way, I do love the first Hanzo film. I haven't seen the other two, but I do really love it, so I'm not cracking on it. But if nothing else, it made me really appreciate his performance as the other character as well, the Blind Swordsman.
Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, I'm not sure if you saw this in the first movie, but you could see where they used kind of some kind of mesh to put their sideburns on mm-hmm. with the hair.
Yeah.
That was cool because you could see the freaking mesh. But anyway, there's the second one called The Snare, and I watched that last weekend. And just before we talked, a couple hours ago, I watched the third movie. It's called Who's Got the Gold? And so this was a lot different, or at least begins a lot differently. We begin with his two buddies. They're out in the swamp or something. I thought they were fishing, but I don't know. But all of a sudden, out of focus, you see somebody rise out of the tall grass, and they take it to be they see a lady with big scars and burns on her face, and they take it to be a ghost. So they hightail it out of there, and I guess it's the middle of the night. I don't know, but Hansel's sitting there, and then you get the scene where he's whacking his penis a little bit, and he goes, "Well, I always wanted to make love to a ghost." So. Anyway, then he does a couple pumps on his rice bag, and then they're off to the swamp to find the chick. They do find her, and then she tries to scare him, but he's like, he don't care, and he's after her. And then she jumps in the lake or whatever, and he takes all his clothes off, and then he's in his big sumo diaper, and he jumps in with her. And he looks like he's trying to drown her for a little bit, and then while they're in the water, they kind of swimming around these big bamboo shoots that are in the water. So he takes her in a big chokehold and pulls her up, and then the two guys they hold her down, and he goes back in the water and he grabs a couple of these bamboo sticks. And the next thing we know, we're back at his house, and these bamboo sticks are super heavy. So he cuts one in half, and then he pours them out, and it's a bunch of gold pieces inside. And this lake is evidently next to the treasury of you know, and so someone's stealing money from the treasury. And it's kind of funny. I was reading about Hansel's character. He's very deviant, but he's also very he's got a lot of morality, especially around the ways and laws. But you know, but he's very deviant of towards women and stuff like that. But of course, he gives the lady the spin cycle, and she's getting ready to say something. And then she looks like she's passed out, and he goes, "Well, you know, I'm glad she lasted this long," is what Hanzo says, or something like that. And then when we turn the bag around, we see there's like a little dagger or something in her neck, a poison arrow or something. And then a bunch of ninjas pop in, and one of the ninjas is the husband of this lady, and. You know, before too long, Hanzo wants to know why, who's been stealing the gold and all this. And then before too long, everybody's in there. He starts executing his traps. Some ninjas fall in some spikes, and there's a blood spray. And then the husband says he'll talk, but then all of a sudden he gets slashed by one of the ninjas who runs out of the building. And from there, we see Hanzo in front of one of the very high people. He's like I don't know what he is. He's a lord or something. And the guy's trying to congratulate Hanzo. But Hanzo's, of course, very rude. They give him some money, and he goes, "I don't want any." He goes, because all the samurai, the samurai there are so poor, and they can't eat. And he didn't feel like taking the money. And, he ends up keeping the money, but him and his boss are got a kind of crazy relationship, yeah. And he ends up giving the gold to his boss, says he owes him one. So I'm getting all these Chinese people or Japanese people confused, but he ends up tracking down some people. Middle-aged women who are basically swinging with these other guys, these young guys. It's crazy. And all these women, I mean, I don't know. She's I don't believe it was in the first movie, but they have black teeth. I don't understand what the deal is with that. It's kind of gross. But
yeah, it's supposed to mean something, but I don't remember what it means.
I mean, I'm sure it's not because they don't brush their teeth. I'm sure it's got some kind of do with the way I don't know, the culture or something. But I've never seen. It's kind of gross to see people with ladies with black teeth. And there's a couple of good scenes where Hansel is actually having sex with he's not spinning, he's doing it normal style with the wife or mistress of the Lord while he's still in the room. It's pretty funny. And there's a blind guy who's in on all this stealing the gold and all this stuff, and then it leads to some big wacky battle at the end. And actually, there's also a guy who's trying to modernize the Japanese armory and weapons. And at the very end, he has a big cannon, and he loads it up and just shoots everybody blows everybody up, the Lord and all his guards and stuff. That was pretty the most wacky ending I've seen.
Cool. So do you recommend the whole series?
Yeah, I mean, if you could find it, I mean, I think around $40 or so might be the cheapest you can get it. But
it's
if you can find
import,
it,
isn't it?
No, so I forgot the company who put it out in the States, but it was out in the States. When I got it, it was I'll have to look. It was released by a company like Animago or something like that.
Animago,
I think. Yeah, I think so. I'll have to look it up. But
I've never seen Hanzo and Animago's catalog because I have them for the site.
Okay.
They're one of my companies, so if they have it, I'll get it. But I didn't see them. I mean, I would have got a Hanzo set if it was available. But yeah, cool. Well, I did actually, after watching the first movie, I went looking for one. If it was in print, it's out of print now.
Yeah, well, it's $60 is what. Or actually, you can get it used on Amazon for $40 and starting at $40. They also have it on VHS, which is kind of strange. This is released by Home Vision, which I've never heard of. But it's out there. I mean, maybe it's on eBay, but
yeah, dude, I totally have tracked down a copy of Hanzo.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, well, I got you on. That was the three movies you were going to cover. This one, right?
Yes.
Yes. There's another movie that I recently got a chance to watch. I don't remember if we talked about it or we had just maybe briefly chatted. But I just got a chance to finally watch Forbidden Kingdom with Jet Li and Jackie Chan. I didn't have a whole lot of expectations for it, and I really like that movie. It's good.
Yeah, I agree. When I went to see it, I was like, they're going to screw this up with this stupid kid from Boston or wherever the hell he was. But, you know, it wasn't that bad. And then, yeah, it was really a fun movie.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was weird because I was pretty sure that Jackie Chan would – I don't want to seem mean, but I've never found Jet Li to be particularly charismatic on screen. His karate skills are awesome, or his you know, kung fu skills are awesome, but Jackie Chan's got that huge personality. But I was actually surprised, man, because Jet Li held his own. He did well. I thought he played a couple of different characters, and I thought he did really well. And then at the end, when you figure out why he's playing more than one character, I thought that was cool too when they explain it.
Yeah, I did not. Honestly, I did not expect that. So, I mean, that's pretty good when you fool somebody, you know, just a little extra little bit there. And it's like, that's really cool, so, especially when they introduce that element in the very first couple of minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I like that. That was
and
good.
You,
I mean,
you don't even realize what was going on.
Right.
But, you know, I went back and watched it a second time. And after – the cool part is there are little hints throughout the movie that tell you about that twist. You know, if you like, how you been as long as I can remember, you know, and stuff like that. And I thought it was pretty cool. And the other thing that surprised the hell out of me was, I shouldn't say surprised me. I knew Jackie Chan and Jet Li would be good. And their one fight sequence in that temple, I thought was just incredible. I mean,
yeah,
Jackie Chan can still hold his own, and do pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I that was awesome, and then there's a whole bunch of comedy with the two, and mm-hmm. training the kid, and even the two ladies in there, one's good, one's bad, they're awesome too.
Yeah, and when doing the training stuff with the kid, what I was really having a blast with is that Jet Li actually gets a couple of good jokes in.
Yeah,
a couple of good lines about his technique that he's being taught.
Well, I think Jet Li sprayed Jackie Chan, didn't he?
Yeah,
one part of it.
Mm-hmm. So, oh yeah, when Jackie Chan's claiming to be more. Yeah, that's actually also funny. Yeah, I forgot about that. That was cool. But then, you know, when they get down to the fight sequences, especially the chick with the really long hair, that's incredible. Yeah. That was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, it's just a lot of, I mean, I got it on Blu-ray and I have, you know, I really wanted to get it on Blu-ray because that was a very visual movie, especially when I was in the theater at the very beginning, when you see the Monkey King on these, mountaintops on the cloud with clouds underneath of them. He's so high up fighting these different soldiers. I said, man, this would be awesome on Blu-ray. And it's pretty impressive. I mean, there's so much there, especially at the end when they're in that temple with the the Jade Warlord or something, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. all that looks incredible. So, yeah, it's a very I was very pleasantly surprised because I was not expecting a whole lot, and it made my day when I saw it at the theater.
Yeah, because you know when you put two big stars like that in the same movie and then you kind of Americanize it and make it for an American audience, a lot mm-hmm. of times I'm like, well, this is either going to be watered down or they're not going to really know what to do with it. But it worked perfectly. And it's almost like a dude, you know, when I was sitting taking notes and talking and thinking about the movie, it's like a fairy tale, man. It's like a mm-hmm. modern day fairy tale with some kick-ass fight choreography.
And one thing I really liked was at the beginning about the credit sequence. It was taking different posters from back in the heyday of these martial arts movies, because that's what the kid is, a big martial arts fan.
Yeah.
And there's a few of them I could recognize, but all that art is just gorgeous on some of these posters, all painted. There's no pictures, no photographs. It's all painted on for these posters. And I mean, and then they kind of make them a little bit more interactive and make them a little bit more animated. But when I saw that, I was like, man, this might be pretty good, because unless they blew all their ideas on the title sequence.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, man. I thought it was a great movie. So I just wanted to bring that up because I thought it was just friggin' killer. Mm-hmm. Now there's another one that I watched recently, primarily because it stars somebody who recently left us, David Carradine. Still getting his freak on at 73. Yeah. But I watched Circle of Iron, I guess it's also mm-hmm. called the Silent Flute.
Silent Flute. Yeah, I was going to bring that up, so I'm glad. That's pretty cool. That's a very – I remember I first saw that movie a long, long time ago on regular television, and I was really impressed. But, you know, I never even knew Bruce Lee had wrote the story. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, it's a very – it's just basically about a journey, and it's a very zen movie. That's the way Bruce Lee wanted it to be. So, and then David Carradine plays several characters in here.
The fight sequences I thought were pretty good. I actually found, and I dig the, I understand the Zen thing with it, and I do mm-hmm. like the ending with the book when the guy finally gets the magic book with all the answers.
Right.
But I did also find the movie to be a little bit slow. I wasn't pleased with it.
Yeah, it does have a little bit of points where you're not sure what he's trying to say, what the story, where we're going with this, and it does slow down because the movie has several different kind of subplots. We have a subplot here, and you know, going a little bit, then here's another one, here's a I don't know, that Arabian looking crap in the middle of the movie.
That's the stuff that really just like, I was like, what am I watching? This is boring the hell out of me.
Yeah, so I mean, And then we got – I think it was the Monkey King, right? David Carradine was playing the Monkey King.
Yeah.
Or the whatever the heck it was called. But, I mean, that's basically what he was looking like. And
– well, he played the one I mean, and in the movie, it's actually the same character. He's actually testing the one guy.
Right. And he got – was it Eli Wallach?
Eli Wallach is a guy – that was funny. That was yeah. kind of a surreal thing where he's like – you know, basically, mm-hmm. Eli Wallach's character is angry over his – again with the Wang.
Yeah.
So he's like – and he's standing in a barrel of oil trying to dissolve it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, well, that was strange. Somebody was smoking a lot of weed. But, I mean, it was weird because there were things like that I found that were interesting. And, again, Eli Wallach was – that was interesting. Eli Wallach's character, I thought he put a lot of effort into it, but was it just me, or did it seem like when he got to the end and he finally meets up with Christopher Lee, who's billed pretty highly in the movie, and
yeah.
shows up at the very end? I thought Christopher Lee was there. There's a few movies I've seen him in, like this, and he did some Fu Manchu films. I just seems like right. It seems to me like he was there just cashing a paycheck.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe. Maybe he was thinking this was below him. Who knows what his thought process was. But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a low key. He doesn't really play it high, you know, very low key. He doesn't really
– yeah.
I don't know. He's not – he doesn't really express him or even stand out as someone – I don't know. you know what I'm saying, right?
You know who was really friggin' funny and good? And it was really just kind of strange to see him. Is Roddy McDowell?
Oh yeah, I was thinking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at the very beginning, you know, he's just sitting there like, "You cheated." It's like, shit, dude, this is funny as hell.
Have you watched any of the extras?
I haven't gotten to the extras yet. No,
because there's another guy. He talked to him. I'm not sure. I think he did some of the stunt choreography and the fight choreography. Jerry Trimble, he did some movies, and he was a big karate champ and stuff like that. And he was it's basically a lot of him just bad-mouthing Carradine about he didn't know what he was doing. He came in drunk or on drugs and all kinds of stuff like that. It's pretty funny.
He did look a little wasted in some of the scenes.
Well, to me, he looked like he was in Kung Fu, so, I mean, he must have been wasted through Kung Fu, too.
Well, yeah,
so.
Dude, he was. You didn't know that?
I didn't know that, but, I mean, I just figured he was dopey.
Well, he was dope.
Yeah, he was dope.
Yeah, I think he had a – he was telling a story. I remember him telling – I forget where I saw this at. But, like, when he was shooting Kung Fu, he went home and he got completely wasted one night. And the studio managed to keep it out of the papers, but he was, like, running naked through his neighbor's houses. So, yeah, no, the guy was – you know, when he said he was experimenting and trying to find Zen and all the other stuff, he was. Yeah, he was having a good time and figuring out where, you know, life was taking him.
So. Well, I mean, Circle Arn, I was going to I was thinking that myself. You can only imagine how it would have been if Bruce Lee had made it, but about as close as we're going to get to seeing it.
Was he going to play the Carradine character, I think?
Yes, I believe he was. I believe he's going to be the Carradine character.
Which is, if you think about it, it's kind of cool because that's not the main character of the movie. Bruce Lee was going to make a movie, but he was going to have, you know, he was, at least if it was written, if that's how he was going to play the character. But yeah, dude, it, you know, you always wonder cause Bruce Lee was awesome, but then, you know, him passing away at such a young age gave a lot of other people, Bruce Lee, L-I, Bruce Lee, L-E, Bruce Lee, L-E-I-G-H. I mean, he gave all these guys a chance to work. Let's not forget Bruce Leroy.
Yeah, we would never have Bruce Sportation unless he had passed away. A lot of people were saying – a lot of people were saying that, you know, Bruce Lee, when he passed away young like James Dean, and that made him more of a legend. I mean,
though? I guess it might have made him more of an icon to Yeah, maybe he's more of a legend to, like, general people. But I think people – I don't know, dude. I just having seen his – here's my take on James Dean. And I'm a huge fan of film. Like, I watch all kinds of movies. I don't particularly think James Dean is that great in any of his films. He did okay. He was a young and up-and-coming actor. But I think he's famous because he died.
Right. I mean, I agree.
Yeah, Bruce Lee was freaking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're just taking the young, died young. He fits in that category. But, yeah, I mean, Bruce Lee was a total different animal. You know, I mean, James Dean had charisma, but, I mean, Bruce Lee had so much charisma, you know, you couldn't even take your eyes off of him. You could just imagine if he had lived what kind of movies he would have made later on and stuff like that. I mean, you know, who knows what would have happened. Maybe in the 80s we would have had we'd be talking about Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan making the movie together. And in the 90s, Bruce Lee would play like an old master training Jet Li and stuff like that. I mean, it'd been a lot of good stuff that would have came out. But I guess all we have left is what he did. And I think there was a recent documentary on History Channel about how Bruce Lee changed the world. So,
yeah.
You know, so, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, he's made a lot of people aware of martial arts and also taught a lot of people about believing in themselves. And he's helped a lot of people, even though he's not alive anymore, just his memory and what he did while he was here. So I know I'm one of them. I mean, when I turn 40, I'm going to finally get me a tattoo, and it's going to be a Bruce Lee dragon on my shoulder because I've always wanted one since I saw the design. So, you know, he's done a lot, even though he's not here anymore.
You can be one of them dudes that turns 40 and gets ink, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. Black ink. Not no crazy rainbows. I'm not getting a koi fish on my chest or anything.
You're going to get a rose on your butt?
A rose? No. I don't know about no roses. I was thinking about getting Uncle Bill and CK's face on both Axe cheeks so I can squeeze them and make them kiss each other.
I'm sure they appreciate that. Yeah. You're like, hey guys, wanna see my tat? No.
Yeah.
So at you're getting out of control now, buddy. You're getting out of control.
I know. I gotta simmer down.
Yeah, simmer down. So well, that's a great segment, dude.
Yeah, and I want to let you know that I'm going to be sending you a movie that hopefully we can review next time. It's called The Five Deadly Venoms.
Excellent. Sounds like another killer flick. And I definitely –
it's awesome.
I will watch that sucker, and we will talk about it because I had a trip with Hanzo, and it was great.
Mm-hmm.
And also wanted to let everybody know that you're doing some video versions of Sensei Cinema, and the last one you did has been put up on the YouTube page not too long ago, and is another really killer one. And I also, you'd mentioned 36 Chamber of Shaolin.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great movie. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, it is, and once you take into effect or take it into mind, it doesn't include any kind of love story, and most of these movies have some type of stuff like that. And it's all based upon him basically training himself and then making himself better. And, you know, Gordon Liu goes there to basically get trained so he can beat somebody up.
Yep.
Or, you know, and then at the very, you know, he understands that's not what it's all about. So, it's kind of a transcendental thing. And there's also a movie that I want to mention. It's very strange because no one dies in this movie. It's called Heroes from the East,
mm-hmm.
or I'm thinking that's it, with Gordon losing that as well, I think. it's a cool movie. It's got all kinds of different weapons, and I was halfway through it, and I thought to myself, I said, ain't nobody died yet. And in the entire movie, no one dies. They have all kinds of fights. I mean, some people get injured, of course, and then I watched a little bit of the commentary, and they were bringing that up as well, so I thought that was pretty neat.
Cool. Have you ever seen he did a – I think it was Gordon Liu did a movie much later. He shot it on video, and I think it's like Shaolin versus Vampire.
Is it Shaolin versus Vampire? I got Shaolin versus Evil Dead.
And this one's like shot on video, and he's got a daughter, and there's like her, his daughter brings like this little boy vampire home, and it's really friggin' weird. Have you ever seen that?
No,
I have. I've got the
yeah, I've got the Shaolin versus the Evil Dead, and it's very their idea of zombies is crazy. They just hop around.
Yeah.
And then they have these – they write some kind of spell on a paper and they stick it in their head and they fall down or something.
Yep.
Or no, they stick some kind of spell, and then that basically gives that person control over the zombies. It's a two-part movie. It pissed me off because I bought it, and then you got to buy another movie to see the end of it.
Crazy. Well, I'll warn you, the one that I'm going to send you is awful, and I'm actually going to send you my copy because I don't care to own it anymore. If anybody would appreciate this thing, it'll be you. So I'll fire that off to you.
Cool.
So, all right. Well, it sounds like we have some stuff coming up for next. Looking forward to that. The Five Deadly Venoms, you say?
Yes.
Looking forward to checking that out. And I'm going to send you some crappy Gordon Liu movie that you'll probably hate me forever sending you. But I know, being a pack rat and collector you are, you'll keep it on your shelves no matter how bad it is.
You know, more than likely, yes.
Yes, more likely, yes. You have an entire house. I have one room, so I'll send you some junk.
Well, I'm limiting everything to that room. I mean, I do still probably have like 30 DVDs in the living room on top of a shelf.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean...
Is that your two must-watch list or something?
Yeah. And I don't have a place for my Blu-rays right now, so they're kind of, most of them are kind of hanging out there, too.
Well, thanks for doing another segment with me. And I'm sorry that it just to let everybody know, this is the segment that should have been in the show that we put up with the Fright Night and the Killer Clowns, but I had a scheduling conflict, so we had to move it to this show that you're listening to now, the Blue Underground show, which, by the way, are you a fan of Blue Underground?
Oh, of course.
Cool. This is in the Blue Underground show, and the people have been listening to Ed and I talk some Blue Underground Blu-rays. I just, you know, what's your favorites?
Wow. I mean, of course I would have to say the Blu-rays I got for review. I mean, the Bird with Crystal Plumage looks awesome. Fast Company looked great for in that type of movie, a drive-in movie, basically.
Fast Company is a weird little flick with William Smith. I dig that one, though. It's good stuff. Looked good on Blu-ray, though?
Yeah, I mean, there is some scenes with grain. I found that a lot with older movies. But then there's certain scenes that look amazing, especially in that part of the movie or in this film where they're driving back and forth between these different races. And you see all the mountains and skyline. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of those are just like completely perfect. I mean, it's just beautiful. It's a good movie. I mean, it's amazing how much there is not a lot of racing in it for a car picture, which makes it even more interesting. Blue Underground for putting out all the reissues of the out of print Anchor Bay stuff. Mm-hmm. I know I had a crappy Phenomenon DVD that locked up, or you know, it was really crappy. It pissed me off. You could never watch the movie all the way through. You had to it basically skipped ahead, and so I of course, you know, I heard it was coming out, so I sold it and got the newer copy, and it works fine, of course. But I mean, that was like a known issue. I mean, they did release a lot of the Argento stuff again. The only thing that really makes me kind of weird is I the Demons movies, Demons 1 and 2, their aspect ratio, for some reason, does not work on a high-def television, at least mine.
Really?
I don't know what it is. Yeah, it's they stretched. I don't know. I mean...
Luckily, those movies suck so bad, there's no reason to watch them.
Oh, man. They don't suck? What's wrong with you?
Dude, Demons 2 is a big steaming pile of crap. Sorry.
It's got young Asia Argento sneaking out to go to clubs.
That's cool. She's a hottie. No, dude. I mean, the first Demons I can kind of be okay with.
It's got Carolina. What's her face in it? Yeah, Coralina.
I know, but Demons.
She's hot.
Piece of shit. I hate that movie.
Oh, you hate it?
Yeah, I really. That's... Demons 2? Demons 2 is a piece of shit.
Oh, man. Well, disagree, I guess. We'll have to live to disagree. But Stevens 1, let's agree that that is a freaking awesome movie. I mean,
I can even watch all the subtext, but it's retarded.
Well, I mean, in a way, I would agree a little bit. But, I mean, I still think it's cool the way it's in a theater. And you got all these crazy people in the theater and talking, especially that black dude with his two hoes. And
he's probably the only the pimp is the only character that I thought was kind of cool. You know, like the freaking chick with her husband who's blind and cheating on him. And
yeah.
I'm just like, that's just dumb. What the fuck am I watching?
And then they had the weird-ass soundtrack, like Billy Idol and all kinds of stuff. But
and it seems to me like they put that whole bit in with them driving around the town, driving around the city, listening to the radio just so they could put this friggin' soundtrack together.
Yeah. Well, I mean, anyway, it was just it just doesn't look presentable. It's just stretched. It's got a weird aspect ratio, like a 1.166 or something. I mean, I haven't even heard of that before. So, you know, I was going to upgrade if it was fixed, but it wasn't fixed. Or I don't know if that was the original, whatever, but I'm not going to buy it. But, I mean, the main thing about Blue Underground is that they're starting to put some of their titles in on Blu-ray. And I know they've lost rights to Suspiria, but, I mean, they still got Deep Red. So that's what I'm holding out.
Oh, shit, they lost Suspiria?
Yeah, I mean, I think 20th Century Fox or the Weinsteins or somebody's got it now.
Oh, man.
So it's going to be a long time if, you know, well, before we see that title out.
I've got an anchor. I've got the one-disc Anchor Bay Suspiria, and then I picked up the two-disc Blue Underground Special Edition.
I have the three-disc. I've got the three-disc.
Well, laddie freaking do. I've got the MP3s of the soundtrack. I don't need to buy the three-disc yet, punk.
Hey, I don't know. I just bought it. But I mean that movie looks fantastic up convert DVDs on a regular television. I know I had a videotape I bought from like Walmart's Brothers Sam's Club or whatever the hell it was, but it was all dirty and shit. And then man, you talk about a cleaned up transfer. So definitely awesome. But that was Anchor Bay, so I went off subject.
Yeah, but cool. I mean, I don't know. Suspiria is probably one of my favorites. And, of course, I mean, you dig Bird with Crystal Plumage. And I'm surprised Deep Red isn't out on Blu-ray yet, right?
No, that will be incredible because, I mean, I just love that movie since I was a little kid when I saw it. I didn't even know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it unedited. I saw it uncut on network television about, like, 1 in the morning on a Saturday night.
Really?
Yeah, I was like freaking out. I said, this is the best shit ever. Then I saw Crazies the next week after that, uncut.
I don't know there's a whole lot to cut out of Crazies, is there?
No, nah, there's a couple boobs.
That's right, there's some boobage.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty good for 13-year-old kids seeing some boobage on free TV. I was like,
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, dude, I mean, the Crazies, that's another Blue Underground title.
Yeah,
I love how you did that. That's great.
Woo! I'm just segue into other things.
King of the segue.
Yeah.
Yep. Crazy is another good movie. So, but I guess we'll wrap things up here. But let me ask you this. I'm gonna put you on the spot since you're completely unprepared, and this is how professional I am. Ready?
Yeah.
Favorite Blue Underground catalog title.
I'm going to have to say Bird with Crystal Plumage on Blu-ray for right now.
Really? Even over Deep Red?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've got the original Anchor Bay. So, I mean, I'm sure that's exact. From my understanding, all that was ported over. There's no differences.
Is it a two-disc?
Yes.
Cool.
I got when it first came out, I got the two-disc special edition. So, but yeah, I mean, since that was only a port... Blue Underground was the first to release that. Besides, I think VCI, I got that disc back, you know, in the 90s. Mm. So, yeah, I think Bird with Crystal Plumage, with the extras and just with the cleanup on the Blu-ray as best they could, I have to give that my thumbs up.
Cool. Well, hey, thanks for coming by again this month and recording your segment, and we'll definitely have to have something. I'm looking forward to check out the Five Venoms for next month's segment, and thanks, man.
Sure, my pleasure.
So, catch you later, and hey, guys, don't forget to check out Steve's show, his own show, Eurocult, which is, again, where's that at?
You can go to mypodcast.com and just search for Eurocult.
Cool. So, I recommend everybody check out Eurocult, and you know what, dude? That's awesome. That's awesome stuff.
It is. Yeah. It's very great stuff.
Yes. You say boobies a lot on Eurocult, which is awesome. I always know, no matter what you're reviewing, I'm going to know if there's boobs, if they're natural, if they're fake.
Oh, come on.
Boobies. Dude, you know what? You ought to rate your movies. Like, you do the rating scale of 5 on Eurocult. You should be like, I give this 2.5 boobs out of 5.
Oh, come on.
It's your thing. It's your boobies, man.
No, I'm not Joe Bob Briggs.
Right, you actually have some talent that you're interesting to listen to.
Oh, man.
Hey, that's a compliment to you. Come on.
All right, I'll take it.
All right, yeah. I do actually like Eurocult, also. Get another episode done. So, all
right. I'm working on it.
I think we've drugged this out long enough.
Yep.
You're listening to the
Paid by the Hour.
Pardon? Oh, yeah, Paid by the Hour. Yeah. Let's see.
Paid by the Hour.
What's the multiplier of 0? I don't remember what the multiplier of 0 is, but anyway. You're listening to the Gut Munchers podcast, and we'll be back right after this. I got the plug. Oh, you know, if you're interested in our, I don't know if you've probably have come to the website when you get the podcast here, but if you haven't, check us out at gutmunchers.com. Ed runs a website, bloodtypeonline.com, another cool website. So check us out over at Gut Munchers. We have new movie reviews every day. We have a weekly web comic that is zombie themed. We have book reviews. We've got at this point, it's getting a little ridiculous. I don't know how long we can keep this up, but we've been doing daily videos on our YouTube page over at youtube.com/gutmunchers. So we got a lot of stuff going on. I know, Ed, you've got a YouTube page where you're putting some stuff up.
Yep, absolutely. You can find us right on the friends page there at Gut Munchers, and yep, vice versa.
You got it. So we got a lot of stuff going on and having some fun, and thanks for listening to another show.
Absolutely, and I just wanted to tell everybody once again, like I do when I'm on here, continue to support sites like Gut Munchers, Blood Type, DeadPit.com, Slasher Club, and many others out there. These are the independent websites. These are the people giving you real opinions. Our opinions are not paid for and bought by big corporations, and continue to support people like us so that you could get the true deal when it comes to these films.
Exactly. Basically, if you hear us review something and you think we're full of crap, it's not because anybody paid us money. It's because we're actually full of crap.
Yes.
So
totally agree. And I'm full of a ton of crap.
Yes. We're completely honest. If I like something you think is a piece of shit, it's not because somebody told me to like it. It's because I like a piece of shit movie, which I will probably, if you call me on it, completely acknowledge the fact that I watch and enjoy tons of really shitty films. But that is kind of a requirement of doing this sort of gig.
Sure is.
Well, this is not a terribly long show. It's going to be about a couple hours. I hope you guys enjoyed it. We will catch you on our next show, which, unfortunately, I'd let you in on what we're going to do, but I haven't really thought about it yet. So check in on the podcast page of the website if you really need to know at some point. Probably when I put this show up, I'll have a notification for the next show. But
now, see, you have to learn how to sell this stuff. See, here, I'll do it for you. Next show, you know what it's going to be, guys? It's a huge, huge surprise. It's massive. It's a surprise. See?
Oh. Well, now I want to know what the surprise is.
I guess you're going to have to tune into the show next time and find out.
Oh.
It's a surprise.
Yeah, it's a surprise. It's a surprise to me, and I do the damn show.
See? Then how surprising is that?
That's really surprising.
See?
That's
what it's all about.
Control. Completely.
I'm telling you. I could sell a red popsicle to a guy in white gloves.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Well, that's vaguely sexual in a gay way.
Not at all. Only to homosexuals.
See, you know, I almost went an entire show without a gay joke.
Yeah, I knew that wasn't going to happen. That's why I had a retort for you. Not going to catch me off guard.
There you go. Well, you're no Jason the Animal Pain, because I can catch him off guard all the time. Speaking of Jason, join Jason and I next month for the regularly scheduled podcast. Well, actually, it'll be this month, but the regularly scheduled podcast, and that should be episode 10. Something cool is coming, but I don't know.
It's a surprise.
It's a surprise. All right. Well, we're getting the hell out of here, because it's getting late, and I need to watch a movie yet. So,
ditto.
All right. Catch you guys later.
Take care.
If you wanna be